we'll start with you, and then we'll follow the sequence of the program thereafter. But let's allow an opportunity for the honorable members who are still trying to refresh their minds. I want your guy under. Can you bring them in? Honorable Mare, are you not sitting too far from us? Why don't you sit within the inner circle? Good morning, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. Shall we start our meeting? Those who are still out there would join us. We're running seriously behind time. As I've indicated in our program, we will start with the Department of Mineral Resources. But as a norm, let us just do a very quick round of introductions so that we know who is here, who is of reference. My name is Fred Gona. I'm the chairperson of this portfolio committee. I would start with my honorable member in my immediate right. Introduce yourself, sir.
My name is Vuselelo Makakula. I'm a member of this committee.
I'm Bulela Tinto, member of this committee.
Rose Sonto, member of this committee.
Eric Marie, member of this committee.
Eric Lucas, member of the committee.
Let's get to you, madam.
Ayanda Boss, committee assistant.
Okay, so I'm Chris, the acting unit manager responsible for secretary support to this committee.
The campaigner, member of Salma.
Don't send in global researcher for the committee.
Yandis Belando from the Parliamentary Communication Services.
Donnie de Villiers Cecil.
My name is Willie Arun, and I'm from the National Union of Metalworkers.
Jeremy Michaels, Department of Mineral Resources.
Vuyiswa Mangu, PLO.
Kwazi Mhlongo, Office of the DG, Mineral Resources.
Mpumi Kevin, Office of the DG, Department of Mineral Resources.
Sandile Nukwina, Mineral Resources.
Peter Alberts from Mineral Resources.
Linda Ainsel, Endangered Species.
At the back there, madam.
Nicola Buerta from IDASA.
Good morning, my name is Bill Lemberg. I'm an economic officer at the U.S. Consulate in Cape Town.
Last row there. Can you come closer to a mic, sir?
Francois Williams, Media 24.
Peter LaGrange, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Sakhelezel from ANC.
Madam. Thank you very much. We would like to warmly welcome everybody present. And without further ado, we will go to our program. But before we do that, let me just highlight to you, honorable members, that there is a change in the parliamentary program as a whole, including the sitting of the House. As a result, there is correspondence we received from the Chair of Chairs and requesting us as portfolio committees to review our programs for this term so that we can bring forward the consideration of pieces of legislation that are before us. As a result, we have Geosciences Amendment Bill before us as this committee, and therefore our program has changed. I don't want to waste too much time of the meeting for today. The committee section is going to circulate the new program. It takes into account all the issues that we have planned for this term, but it changes the timing. For instance, bringing forward the briefing by the department on the amendment bill, bringing forward our public hearings on the bill, as well as the considerations, because we would need to finish before the week of the 13th of September if we want this bill to be debated in the House so that it can then go to the NCOP for their consideration. So you would see, but the program is not tempered too much to shift a lot of other things out of the program. It's just the dates that were swapped with one activity and another activity, taking into account that particular request. So the secretary will circulate it. If there are any difficulties, you would then get in touch with me so that we can then discuss that. Honorable members, as we have indicated that today, yes, we are continuing with our public hearings, but before we do that, we felt it necessary that we request the department to come and appraise us on what we have observed in the recent past, where there has been sustained publicity, which has been negative in the media, around a number of issues. They also have been editorials on some of the reports that have been written by journalists. In particular, the implementation of the MPRDA by the Department of Mineral Resources, particularly in this instance, the granting of licenses, procedures, and so forth. If you would recall, we we were invited by the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry to jointly look at the matter pertaining to Kumba and ArcelorMittal. And we have participated in those deliberations in that dispute. And as a result, then, we also felt that we needed to then hear from the department, what is this negative publicity? What is it all about? What are the facts behind this publicity and these speculations? And also to hear from them, are these, you know, true developments within the department? And are there also certain challenges that they've identified as the department in the process of implementing the law? And if so, what remedial actions are they planning to take in order to correct the situation and restore the image of mining in this country? Because whatever is being reported about has got impact, because it does reach the consideration of the investor communities, both local and international. And we know that investors, you know, they would follow whatever is reported in the media, and in some instances would not necessarily take the trouble of establishing the true facts behind stories that are being written. So as a result, therefore, we are happy that the department agreed at a very short notice to appear before this committee so that they can then clarify issues, particularly regarding the issue of Lonmin as well as Kumba and ArcelorMittal as examples of this sustained public negative publicity that the department has received. So, DG and your team, let's hand it over to you to take us through those facts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Members. The department has noted with increasing concern the growing negative sentiment regarding South Africa's mining sector, specifically in relation to our regulatory framework. Various media reports and comments from analysts and other observers on these issues have combined in recent weeks to create an environment in which companies and investors alike are facing some uncertainties. Fact and fiction have blended in an unseemly fashion, leading to uncertainty and vulnerability within the sector. Our reading of the situation, Chairperson, informs us that the provenance of the negative media reports is the current legislative framework, which is open to more than one interpretation in respect of some of its provisions. As a result, there is disagreement between the government officials and some players in the industry on the construction that has to be given to these provisions of the law. The case in point is the matter of Kumba versus department, which is currently before courts and therefore sub judice, and the Lonmin matter, which has also been the subject of judicial proceedings. And the chairperson has indeed made a reference to these two cases as epitomizing the current public outcry that is there. We believe that South Africa's mining industry has been and remains the bedrock of Africa's economic powerhouse. The mining sector, together with its related industry, remains critical to the country's socio-economic development. With Citibank estimating earlier this year that South Africa has 2.5 trillion rands worth of mineral reserves, it is clear that the mining industry is potentially an important cog in the wheel that is driving the war against poverty and underdevelopment in our country. The Honorable Members will recall that the Minister promised earlier this year that we would improve on our 2009-2010 Fraser Institute ranking. I'm pleased to note that In the Fraser Institute's mid-year survey, South Africa has improved on its global ranking, rising 13 places from 44th out of 51 jurisdictions in April to 31st out of 51 countries this month. This is a positive development, and I would like to think that the significant improvement in our ranking is as a result of the hard work we have put into being, bringing the entire leadership of the mining industry together to identify the challenges facing our industry. Honourable members will further recall that on 30th June this year, the leadership of the mining industry and the minister signed a declaration which underpins our strategy for the sustainable growth and meaningful transformation of the mining industry. The aim of the strategy is to ensure that, amongst others, the industry improves its global competitiveness, promotes investment, and transforms and drives transformation. I mention all this to remind us about the fact that we have, in fact, been taking great and unprecedented strides towards ensuring that mining reclaims its rightful position in the South African economy. There is no doubt that clouds have been gathering over our country's mining reputation, and I want to reassure all our stakeholders that South Africa is indeed a mining jurisdiction worthy of future investment. Flowing from the tripartite process, which led to the mining industry strategy and the more public debate recently, it is clear to me that, number one, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act of 2002 contains a number of ambiguities. Number two, due to the fact that the MPRDA is a relatively new piece of legislation, there is a lack of well-developed jurisprudence which would ordinarily assist with the interpretation of the law. In the absence of such precedents, officials apply the letter of the law as opposed, for example, to interpreting the spirit or the intentions behind the law. The lack of transparency in and access to our licensing database is causing unnecessary suspicion of our system. We have administrative capacity problems, and lastly, there are increasing perceptions of corruption and or incompetence within the department. In order to address the above, the department is implementing the following plan of action. Number one, a joint stakeholder task team has already identified a list of amendments to the MPRDA, and these will be submitted to Parliament for processing as soon as possible. Number two, with effect from 1st of September 2010, information on the status of exploration and mining licenses will be accessible on the department's website. This is in the interest of transparency and means that all stakeholders, including members of the public, will have access to our new electronic administrative system. Number three, in the interim, my department is developing a totally new integrated system of license process tracking, which will be ready for public access within the next 6 months. With effect from the 1st of September 2010, we will impose a moratorium on the receiving of prospecting applications. The moratorium is to be published in the Government Gazette shortly and will last for 6 months to allow for a comprehensive audit of the licenses granted since the promulgation of the MPRDA. This will further enable us to clean up our database, thus paving the way for the incorporation of uncorrupted data into our new integrated electronic system. All other existing licensing activities will continue as normal. With immediate effect, prospecting rights will no longer be, renewal of prospecting rights will no longer be issued at regional offices, and will instead be issued from our head office. The Director General has since the beginning of this year initiated a process which has identified a number of administrative inefficiencies and fault lines, including capacity problems. To give some context to the issues at hand, it is important to consider that the DMR excuse me, to give some context to the issues at hand, it is important to consider that the DMR has dealt with no less than 25,600 license applications since 2004. The investigation conducted internally, which is currently ongoing, has revealed an excess of 100 cases of apparent administrative irregularities. These differ in degrees of materiality. A decision, therefore, has already been taken that chief directors will now be deployed to regional offices as of 1st of September 2010 in order to strengthen leadership and oversight in all types of service delivery. All cases of double granting of licenses will be resolved within the next 3 months, which is one of the administrative irregularities that we have picked up in the process of looking at what is happening internally. The upgrading of all our regional offices will continue and is scheduled to be completed within the next 6 months. Allegations of abuse of office and all corruption will be dealt with speedily and effectively. Towards this end, we would like to encourage the media and the general public to furnish us with the relevant information in order to investigate and refer for prosecution such cases. It goes without saying that many lessons have been learned since the MPRDA became law in 2004, and our department now has valuable experience upon which, for example, we are basing our proposals for amendments to the legislation which we intend taking to cabinet before the end of this year. The order of processing applications, the so-called pecking order, in Chapter 4 of the Act, is, for instance, an area where we clearly need to make amendments. As a result, a number of areas that need amendments have been identified. In general, we have found some of the provisions of the law being open to more than one interpretation. For example, Section 11, relating to regulating the transferability of rights, is one other area of the law that we will be paying attention to as we amend, taking from the lessons and experience we have had where rights have been granted to certain entities and sold to others the next day, without being exercised in terms of the undertakings being made at the application stage, and therefore breaching the material terms and conditions of such rights. Another example in which we have learned serious lessons from the current construct of the Act is the grey area with regard to regulating associated minerals. Currently, the law allows for the granting of different minerals to different entities on the same land. The amendment processes will therefore have to consider a clear format of regulation in the area of associated minerals. Unfortunately, the tendency has been that where there has been a difference in the interpretation of the law, people tend to impute impropriety on the part of the officials. The point is, the officials apply the law as they find it. If the law as they find it is open to a number of interpretation, and the interpretation that is used by the officials to underpin their administrative decisions, you know, happens to be not favorable to somebody else who has a different interpretation, that person is allowed in terms of the law to approach the courts for interpretation, rather than for people to begin to cast aspersions and question the intentions behind that kind of interpretation. So that's the problem. Another area is that the contracted rights were held in terms of the old Mineral Act, which provided for undivided shareholding. However, the new Act, which regulates the new order rights, including the converted old order rights, did not anticipate the fragmentation of rights. Such issues, including matters of administrative discretion, will form part of the proposed legislative review. The new administrative regime will be supported by a new quality management IT system that will improve licensing application management and administration of existing rights. The system is designed with robust global information systems capability to enhance land use, protection of sensitive areas, and communication with other interested stakeholders. Workflow capability is central to the new system's functionality. The capability will ensure tracking, sequential processing of applications, and improve accountability of all personnel in the management of the licensing process. The department will be able to conduct mine audits and inspections in line with the priority schedule generated by the system. Overall, the system will enhance document security and management with its built-in security features and control. The system will improve reporting to all stakeholders, government, markets, and departmental principals. Other benefits include common approaches of standardization across the various administrative regions. Transparency and consistency will be the hallmark in the management of South Africa's mineral resources. In conclusion, honorable members, I want to point out that we have been hard at work over a considerable period to improve on our performance as the regulator of South Africa's mining industry. In addition to our own experience in implementing the MPRDA, our interaction with business and labor in producing the declaration we signed on the 30th of June this year was invaluable in producing the measures which we have put in place. I am confident that these measures will produce the desired results to ensure that South Africa continues to rise in the global rankings as a reputable mining jurisdiction. As the ministry entrusted with this responsibility, the department is committed to achieving these goals. And, Honorable Chair, I would also like to point out that the kind of controversial issues that we are currently hearing about in the media today, I believe were bound to happen. Remember, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that the process of conversion of the old order rights into new order rights with the consequence of losing those rights if you have failed to convert them has now come to an end because it had to last for 5 years. That is from 2004 up to 2009. So we are now beginning to see the impact of the MPRDA. And that impact, since it has the possibility of some people losing their rights, there is bound to be this kind of disagreement. And is it a bad thing, Honorable Chair? I believe it is not. Because it is natural that when you move from one system into another system, there is bound to be these kinds of disagreements. And it is for that reason, therefore, that as the jurisprudence around this piece of legislation evolves, there will be these disagreements. And indeed, jurisprudence arises as a result of disagreements. And that's why we believe that when those differences in the interpretation arise, we must not be quick to begin to say that the regulatory system in South Africa is collapsing. I think what we need to do is to begin to say that it is indeed evolving. And nobody is arrested or banished from South Africa because he has dared to challenge that in a court of law. All these are still being challenged in a court of law, and we believe that the judiciary will therefore be the best mediator in this process, whilst the parliament has to do also its job of trying to close as much as many ambiguities as there are in the legislation. We, as the appliers of the law, I repeat, we will apply it as we find it. You give the law to us with a number of possible interpretations to us, we'll use those interpretations, and we must not be blamed for that. So, I believe that what has now happened is that we have correctly identified the source, the actual source of the problem, and we must go and address that. I thank you.
Thank you very much, TG. Honorable members, I would allow an opportunity for you to interact and engage with the presentation made by the Director General. I see, recognize Honorable Kakula. For now.
Chairperson, I think the department now, what they are doing, they are shifting the blame. It's when they are shifting the blame to the parliament, of which we don't have to take that. And also, they are accepting the blame. Accepting the blame, and also, they are trying to solve the problem. And by saying that, Chairperson, I mean that they said, speaking about the current legislative framework, also when you check, you find them speaking about they are increasing perception of a corruption and incompetency in the department. And also, they want also to normalize the issue of the licensing. Really, I don't get where did it go wrong to the department. The department must not shift the blame. It is very clear, Chair, that there are a lot of double granting of the licensing in the department. There are a lot of things that are happening in the department, but I'm very surprised when the department just shifting the blame to the parliament and speaking about the legislative and the law. If the department is given the mandate to check that everything is correct, to work down there. And if you check, Chairperson, there is no transparency in this thing of licensing. No transparency. And other things, we hear these rumors from the media. This is the new things to know about it. We get it from the media. You are always here with us. You are supposed to tell us that this piece of the legislation, it is a problem here and there and there. But you allow us and then you go out to implement, you implement wrong. And you accept, DG, that there is a perception of the corruption and incompetence in your department. And then just tell us which is the legislation or is the corruption in the department. That's all, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lucas. Thank you. And thank the department also for trying to explain to us what is happening. And I think when you admit that there are some things like incompetence and corruption, at least you can heal it, because you make the situation, you acknowledge that there is a problem. And once you acknowledge there is a problem, there's a good hope of that problem being solved. I just a question I'd really like to ask is, with the granting of the old replacing the old order rights with the new order rights, have any old order rights people applied when applied for the new order rights? If they haven't applied, what has been done to them? Because the period has expired. I think that's my question. What has been done? Have we retrieved those old order rights and put them in the pool, or are they still out there with the old owners?
Thank you very much, Honorable Fondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think with this now, the department is bringing forth some clarity around these ambiguities or this media hype that is negative both towards the industry and the department. The first thing that I would want to check is, in line with what Honorable Member Lucas is saying, what is at play when old order rights are replaced with the new order rights? Because my understanding is that when you are given this this license right, you are required to adhere to certain expectations, failing which those rights will be withdrawn by the shareholder. Now, what happened? I don't want to get into the Kumba Metal kind of a squabble, but one would want to also understand that. Secondly, DG, this piece of legislation was enacted in 2002. It's not even 10 years, and we were identifying loopholes there. How did it go through? I will take the blame as Parliament because it went through me, but how was it processed through all the legal systems, administrative systems, up to where we passed it? I partially take the blame, but we would want to share. Isn't that a reflection, negative reflection to the department, if a legislation would not last even 10 years, I don't know how many years from 2002 up to now, it's about 8.
Well, for your information, Honorable Sondo, whilst it was enacted in 2002, but it was promulgated in 2004, which
wow.
means it came into operation in
2004. In
2004? Yes.
Then it makes the problem a bit bigger. Why was it processed? And within this short space of time, such ambiguities or irregularities are bound to happen or are happening with it. I think for now, those would be my questions. Thank you.
I'd love to respond
on the other. Okay.
Can you hold on the other questions? I've noted here,
please.
Honorable Mare and Honorable Chinto. But let me allow the CC to answer, and then we will take that round.
Honorable Magagula, shifting the blame, I think that's an unfair judgment that I'm shifting the blame. What I'm actually saying, I'm putting responsibilities where they belong. Actually, that's why you are saying that we are shifting the blame to Parliament. At the same time, we are accepting the blame, and again, we are solving the problem. What I'm trying to emphasize here is that we need all of us to work together. The Parliament has a responsibility in dealing with this matter. We have a responsibility to deal with this matter. Because what is important at the end of the day is for us to correct this. The regulatory environment in South Africa is the responsibility of all of us. It is a responsibility for us. The reputation of the South African jurisdiction is a responsibility for all of us. It is the responsibility of all the stakeholders, including Parliament, including labor movement, including the owners of the capital, the owners of the mining companies. All of us, we have this responsibility. And therefore, it will not help for us to keep on shifting the blame and pointing fingers. All what we have to do is to begin to work together to address this. If you read me as shifting the blame, that's not what I intended to convey. What I intended to convey was where the responsibility lies, because if we don't identify who is responsible for what, it is not going to be possible for us to resolve this problem. And increasing corruption and incompetence, if you heard me correctly, I told you that there is an allegation, there are allegations of corruption, allegations of incompetence, which are the matters that we are currently grappling with. As we speak, the DDG responsible for mineral regulation is in the regional offices to look at those cases of incompetence so that we can deal with them. The cases of corruption, you know, I was reading the paper last night, that some of the CEOs of the mining companies are saying that they are afraid of giving the information about corruption because they will be punished. But the problem is, if you don't give us that information on corruption, how do we then deal with it? We cannot deal with it if you don't tell us. We have been hearing these rumors about corruption, but nobody has come to us with evidence and say to us that, look, here is the evidence of corruption. Instead, in areas of disagreement with the interpretation of the law, people believe to say that those interpretations which do not favor them were actuated by corruption. But where are the actual cases of corruption? Let's see them. Let's hear them. Let's get that information. Actually, if you feel that if you bring that information to the department, that information about corruption to the department will punish you by delaying your licenses, etc., etc., go, for God's sake, to the police. Because corruption is a punishable crime in South Africa. If you feel that the department will victimize you, go to the police, report those cases of corruption to the police. You see, I am yet to hear a corruption case that has been reported against the officials of the department. But we cannot run away from the fact that there are perceptions of corruption, whether they are correct or not. And we cannot then deal with perceptions. The only way in which we can then deal with perceptions is to do what we are currently doing, where we are making our administrative process transparent. That's why, as of the 1st of September, you know, our NMPS now will be transparent. It will be on our website so that people can see the processing of the application from the day of receipt up to the day of execution. So it's going to be there, open. The public must go and look at it and see. Because everybody with vested interest will always say that, you know, I lost because of corruption. Even those who had submitted incorrect applications will never admit that my application was incorrect. They'll say that it was because the officials of the department were corrupt. And by the way, wherever there is a corrupt department official, there is also a corrupt person in the private sector. So let's not look at the issue of corruption one-sidedly. Who's corrupting the officials of the department? Are those people who are supposed to gain? So let's address the issue of corruption holistically. Let also the industry do something in order to address the issue of corruption, whilst we also do something to deal with the issue of corruption. And you said you do not get there's a lot of double granting. I don't know what a lot is, because up till now we have been we have processed about 25,600 since the promulgation of the Act. 25,600 cases of application, and out of that 25,600, approximately 100 of them have indicated some irregularities, including double granting. And what actuates double granting, Honorable Chair? When we moved from the old system into the new system, some of the data that was contained in the old system was not migrated into the new system. And as a result, since it was not captured into the new system, the officials, when they were processing the application, they were processing it on the basis of what is contained in the data. So those areas that were not included in the new data, they then regarded them as available. You know, because what we should have done was that immediately after the transition from the old system into the new system, we should have called all the license holders to physically come to government departments and say, here are my licenses, so that we verify and re-register them. But what happened, we just depended on the system. Not all the information that was contained in the old system was then transferred into new system, and it was just a genuine administrative error. And as a result of that, rights were granted on areas that where people also had rights. And that's what we are currently dealing with right now. In those cases, we have approximately about 30 cases of that nature, which are now being, which are now in the process of clearing out. Another reason is that people say that they have double grants, whereas those double grants relate to the farm, but not to the portions of the farm. It's farm Flatfontein, but Flatfontein has various portions, and licenses are given on portions of farm. So because it so happens that there is an overlap in terms of the existence of the license, it exists on farm Flatfontein, but on different portions, some people were believing that they were having licenses tainted with spatial conflict. And those are the things that we've been dealing with right now. We have already indicated that by December this year, we'll have cleared those things up. Because we are working flat out. We have been going to all the regional offices, calling all the license holders to come. Because what we're doing now, we're just doing it physically. We're saying, license holders who are affected by this, please come. And let us explain. Let's see what is happening. And when we look at some of these, you know, you find out these are matters that can be corrected. But I take it that there are licenses where that are being that have been granted to more than one person. But what is important is that that license becomes a real right once registered. None of those licenses have been registered because we picked them up at the stage when they had to be registered. Because the database that is used by the registry, licensing registry, is correct one. So they were able now to say no, we cannot register this. And the basis for us to pick up this is because they were stuck there; they couldn't be registered. And when we started looking at why are they unregisterable, we discovered that they are actually double grants. That we must not blame the law. Our responsibility is to check whether everything is correct. We do check that everything is correct. And by the way, everything, even in respect of the cases that have been cited here, we believe that it was done administratively correct. It was according to the letter of the law. Whether it was according to the spirit of the law, that's something else. But government officials have to apply the law as they find it and as they understand it. So that's why the application of the law has now enabled us to pick up what are the gaps that exist in the law. And I think the positive of it is that within 5 years, we have been able to pick those things up before much damage happens to it. You can imagine if all these problems would be happening for the next 10 years, it would have been a problem. Now, I'm as yet to hear a piece of legislation that has not necessitated, that whose application has not necessitated changes in it. I'm yet to find that. No piece of legislation has ever been implemented without finding the need for its amendment. There has always been that that situation. So the fact that this law is being amended, I don't think that it is a problem. Okay. Honorable Lucas, what has happened to the old order rights? And you see, that's why Honorable Lucas, I was saying that 2009 was the crunch time, because by then, everybody who had not applied for the conversion of his old order rights into new order rights loses them. And that's why you are going to find these kinds of disputes during this time. It's precisely because you are beginning to see the effects of the application of the NPRDA. And why this law? This law deals with vested interests. This is one of the most important economic pieces of legislation in South Africa, which touches on vested interests. And therefore, since this law deals and touches on vested interests, there is no doubt about the fact that there will be these kinds of disagreements. Now, the reason why now we are saying that for the next 6 months we want to conduct an audit is precisely because we want to know who has not converted his or her old order rights into new order rights, so that we can then begin to have that database of those licenses that have been converted into the old order rights and those that have not converted into the new order rights. And our hope is that once that happens, we will then be able to determine what it is that has to be done to them. How are we going to deal with those rights that have lapsed? Because whether you like it or not, the ArcelorMittal Kumba saga has been a lesson to us. Because in terms of the law, when the right lapses, it vests in the state, it reverts to the state. And what happens to rights that are in the custodianship of the state? They become available to whoever to apply for them. And because what happened there in that case was that the officials of the department were dealing with licenses, with authorizations, not with mine. You know, it was inconsequential where the authorization is in terms of the law. What was important was whether the right was available, whether the area was available, and therefore a license could be given. So those are the practical realities now that we have to go and deal with. Which is why that it is going to be now important for us to say that we must not just deal with these rights just as we deal with the other rights in the Act. Because even now, rights have lifespan, which is 30 years or 20 years. After 20 years, what happens? It lapses. And if it lapses and you don't renew it, it reverts to the state. And if it reverts to the state, it can be made available to anybody who applies. But it will be important then that once we now realize how many of these rights have now lapsed, we go and see where are these rights, on which properties, on which mines are these rights, before we take a decision as to what we have to do with them. Because if that was the case, if the law allowed that, even in respect of the ArcelorMittal situation, if the law allowed that, the officials should go and see where these rights are before they grant the license. They would have seen that this prospecting right is actually on an existing mine. But the law doesn't require that. The law says that if the right has lapsed, it vests into the custodianship of the state, and if it vests in the custodianship of the state, it has to be dealt with in a particular way. And they dealt with it in that particular way, which is what will be coming now back to Parliament to ask that, please, Parliament, can we prescribe a process of dealing with non-converted rights or with lapsed rights? How do we deal with them? Do we deal with them just like any other license, or we will have a specific process that will enable us now to publish them, perhaps as an example? We auction them to the general public, you know, or we decide whatever we want to do with them. But let there be a specific procedure end process that is prescribed in the law as to how to deal with them. Unfortunately, the law as it currently stands doesn't allow that. So we will know as to what has happened with these rights once we have conducted this audit. Remember that it is only now the 5-year period lapsed last year. So that's why we are conducting this audit this year. Honorable Sonto? Yes, I think I've partially responded to you on what happens to the converted rights and all those things. How did this piece of legislation go through Parliament with all these words? Luckily I was there. So this was one of the most consulted pieces of legislation, consulted upon pieces of legislation. It was based on a consensus, on a consensual process involving all the stakeholders. Whereafter then it was taken to cabinet and then it went to court. But there is one thing that I would like to correct. An impression must not be made that the whole of the MPRDA is a bad law. It is not. It is only certain provisions of the law that are ambiguous, that are open to a multiplicity of interpretations. So not all the Act is a bad law. It's just few provisions of it which are not consonant with the objective reality as we apply the law. The test of the law in any event doesn't exist in theoretical analysis. It exists in the actual application of the law. There are so many people who have been pointing out the fact that, you know, there is a lot of administrative discretion that is imbued in the Act. So that discretion is created by the fact that officials are allowed to give interpretation to the provisions of the law, rather than the law dictating what the officials should do, which is what I'm saying that now we will be doing. We'll be coming with a proposal as to what changes have to be effected in order to tighten that. But Honorable Sonto, this is not a bad law. There are challenges in certain provisions of the law. And by the way, this is not the only law that has got challenges of this nature. So many pieces of legislation also have these kinds of challenges. But there has been no much noise more than this, because this piece of legislation deals with vested interest. So that's the problem. Therefore,
Thank you, DG. Honorable Marin, and followed by Honorable Sonto.
Thank you, Chairperson. Through you to the Director General. I want to first start off by thanking the Director General, stating publicly here today that he will act on any evidence given if there's a problem with corruption in his department. I really appreciate that. Secondly, I would just say, in the interest of transparency, I really welcome this new system coming up of license process tracking, because it's important for the public, for everybody outside there, to see it's open and the way the process will run. But I want two things of clarity and points I want to put to you forward this morning. I've seen that you actually stated here that the renewal of prospecting rights will be issued from this point in time by the head office. In a certain sense, it's a centralization of decision making. But on the next page, you stated that you will be upgrading your regional offices and that you will, at this point in time, deploy your chief directors to those regional offices. So can I ask a question to you for clarity as far as service delivery is concerned, that in after 6 months, will this authority of actually then reissuing licenses will be given back to the regional offices? I've got clarity on that. I think it's important the public out there to know that fact. The next question I want to ask is, do you have any indication at this point in time what is the backlog of license applications in the department, and do you have the necessary staff capacity to address that backlog? And then the last thing that is very important to me is that the new system is designed actually to protect as well sensitive areas as where applications is concerned. This is quite serious for me, specifically where applications is in the area of areas that is being declared as Ramsar areas. So I would really look forward to see the way we can get around that. And while I've got the mic on my side, Chairperson, the last one, I want to say to the Director General, I haven't got every day the opportunity to interact with him, is in connection with the rehabilitation of minds. It's a very serious thing, and I think he doesn't get the necessary attention, and I want to come back to the budget amount that was in the beginning of the year when the budget was tabled of only an amount of 52 million that was actually put aside for rehabilitation of minds, and we really have to look into that and the way we can get around and to address this problem, because it becomes more serious and more serious in South Africa. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Honorable Tindo.
Thank you, Chair. Well, it's true that we have not been interacting with you, DG, and I think we, from now on, understand now the two departments. Your department was Department of Minerals and Energy. It is now Mineral Resources. Energy is removed. And I think because of that, we are going to have many problems, because there are old issues and now there are new issues coming. And as a result of that, so we need to interact with the department. But also, DG, I saw the minister last night saying there's going to be, I don't know whether suspension of licenses or license issuing, of which license is that. I just want to have a clarity on that. And also there's, you know, there's so many things happening in mining, because this is supposed to be a very rich department. Now, there are people that have been killed. Now, the department is also quiet on that. I don't know what the department is saying on that. I just want to hear from you, DG. Thanks.
Would you care to respond to those, DG, and then I'll summarize?
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, Honorable Murray. This is just a temporary arrangement, the one of removing the authority to renew licenses at regional office. It will only be for the duration of the 6 months whilst we are conducting these audits. Because these audits are really very, very, very critical to us. Because if you look at the the number of prospecting rights that we have granted since 2004, there are so many. And the lifespan of prospecting rights is 5 years. And that's why it is going to be very critical for us now to go and conduct this this audit now. Because we don't see them graduating into mining rights. And that's why we don't see many mines being opened. So we want to find out where they are. What is happening with them? You see, others, we see them being transferred, being sold on to other people. So we want to see where are they. We've been granting them. And we've been granting them based on the legal provision that will give preference to the applicants who advance the interests of the HDSAs. Where are the HDSAs in the mining industry? What is happening? Because we have been giving these licenses. So those are the things that we want to go and look at. That's why concomitantly with that, we're saying that there has to be the strengthening of Section 11, which allows
that transferability of rights. So this audit is going to give us a lot of information about a lot of things. You know, what you are seeing now happening because of this, of the effects of the transition from the new regime into the new regime, you know, will pale into insignificance. The kind of controversies that you see now, they'll pale into insignificance if compared with the kind of controversies that will be spanned out by the outcomes of this audit. Because it will be a different group of people now will be complaining. Now it's the established companies who are complaining because they've lost their rights, because they have not converted them into their new order rights. You'll see, after we complete this process, it will be the new entrants who will be complaining, because also their rights will be lapsing, you see. The capacity of the department, yes, we agree that the capacity of the department as it currently stands is informed by the structure that constituted Department of Minerals and Energy. So we are in the process of designing a new organizational structure that is now informed by the new mandate and the new responsibilities that have to be carried by this department. So indeed, we concede that we don't have the kind of capacity that we'd wish for, would wish to have in the department. Rehabilitation of mines, we received a letter from the chairperson of the committee saying that we must come to the committee on the 25th, is it 25th, in relation to this matter. I would prefer to address that, to address you on this, on rehabilitation, at that committee meeting on the 25th. Honorable Tinto, I agree.
Seems to be a follow-up. Honorable Mare?
Yes.
Yes, sir, thank you. I have a follow-up for the Director General. There is this issue about the sensitive areas because increasingly there is becoming a conflict between the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Environment, specifically to where there's mining applications or prospecting applications for Ramsar areas. So I would really you to respond on that one. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, that's why Honorable Murray would like to get a system that will enable our departmental processes, that is Departmental of Environmental Affairs, Land Affairs, and all the other departments, you know, to begin to talk to each other before the actual grant of a license. You know, our system must be able to talk to the system of the Department of Land Affairs or Agriculture to indicate what areas have they identified for a particular land use, in which case then we may not grant licenses there. In respect of environmental affairs, they must then be able to indicate, we must then be able to identify those areas that are identified as sensitive, you know, in their database. And we don't have to grant a license thereon. So that's the thinking. That's how the system will work. There was a question on the backlog. What backlog do we have? Off the cuff, I'm not in a position to say what backlog we have, but I can submit that information to you. Through a written what we call. But what I want to say is that the issue of backlog gets somehow distorted insofar as it comes to the issue of conversion of old order rights into new order rights. Remember that the new legislation requires companies to comply with certain new processes, social and labor plan, things that were not there in the past. But the law as it currently stands doesn't allow the minister to refuse that application. The application for conversion cannot be refused, which therefore means that we keep on, we keep the application in the system and keep on negotiating with the company. That company, please have a BEE. Company, please have an SLP. And companies ignore us at times precisely because of the fact that they know that as long as their application is in, whether the application is correct or not, the law says that as long as the application is in, your operation is protected. So let's take a company, for instance, that has a lifespan of about 5 or 6 years. You see? And they see that, for me, I'm only left with 6 years. Now, this new law says that I must have a DE, I must have a social and labor plan. These things are going to eat into my revenue. I want this money. No, but the law as it currently stands allows me to continue to operate as long as I put in an application. And the minister cannot complete that process because she cannot refuse it. So that's another area, that's another loophole that is in the law. And as a result, these applications now are there as long as they are not compliant. We cannot reject them, we cannot refuse them, because the law doesn't allow us to refuse them. So now they appear now to the general public as backlog, whereas the people, the companies concerned are just marking time. So that's the problem. That's how the issue of backlog then gets a little bit distorted. People killed. First interaction. I agree that we haven't had much interaction. And the honourable members will realise that the department comes to the committee by invitation. I cannot Mero Motu come to the committee. So that interaction can be initiated from the committee side, and we'll appreciate it and we'll welcome it. Which also goes back to the question that was asked by Honorable Makagula, that we have been meeting here and I've not been telling them about this. I think the same issue arises. I don't determine the agenda of the committee. So the committee, if they want me to come and brief them on the administrative processes in the department that I do, because I take these administrative things as things that I have to do on a daily basis, because the issue of the amendment of the law is something that comes from me. And we have always been indicating to, the channels, I've been talking to him about that there will be a need for the amendment of the law. And when we also briefed the committee about the outcomes of the MIGDET, we did indicate that there are problems in the law. So it's not something that we're just coining now and bringing it to the committee as an excuse. It's not. It's something that has been going on, that was identified by a stakeholder process. People killed on the mines, that's another very tricky one. Because that mine is on care and maintenance. So for us, it's supposed to be unoperational. Hence, the people who are operating there are said to be illegal miners. And as the committee will recall, that the issue of illegal mining, we once dealt with it in this committee, but it was then transferred to the law enforcement department. So the issue of illegal mining and the killings that took place there, are issues that belong to the security enforcement the law enforcement agencies. Of course, it helps the reputation of the South African mining industry, because once the investors believe that mines in South Africa that are under care and maintenance can be accessed by people illegally and they get shot, etc., etc., it becomes a problem. And it's something that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Let's remember that this is not the only subject matter for today, but let's allow you, Honorable Murray.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will stop with the last one while I've got the opportunity with the DG present. This portfolio committee was on the oversight visit for 2 weeks, and we've been to the Northern Cape, and we visited companies like the BS, Alex Gore, Transnet, and Black Mountain Company. And I just wanted to touch on what you've said about the social and labor plans. And in most cases, the inspection of those plans that we received on paper would be coming into effect now in November. And I just want to bring to his attention that this must really be, I'm going to put it, quite a good qualified staff from your department to look into this matter, because that's a commitment on paper, and it must be inspected if that is being actually rolled out as according to the new law. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we need to step off this this item. We thank you, DG, and your delegation, and we trust that this interaction with us was really a necessity, because our concern has been based on what we told you, that there is this negative reportage across the media. And we hope that with the steps that you are proposing here, we are going to correct the situation. In the main, you see, especially when you look at the administrative arrangements, the Lonmin debacle, in our view, is an unnecessary problem that we brought to ourselves. Because this week, you decide to stop them from mining the associated minerals. The following week, you then grant them back the right for them to continue mining Lonmin. Eh? You want to clarify that? Yes, please. Okay.
Yeah, let me explain this. Lonmin applied for the so-called Section 102, which basically is an application to include associated minerals into their existing mining right. Now, when you do such application, as a matter of course, we do go and conduct an inspection. So when the department went to conduct an inspection on the operations of Lonmin, they discovered that indeed Lonmin is disposing of these associated minerals that they were applying for. Remember, at that stage, their application for this 102 was at the tail end. It is at that stage that you go and conduct an inspection. So what should they do when they see that there was an illegal act that was being conducted by Lonmin? They stopped them from selling. They said, don't sell this until we complete processing your application. Indeed, the following week, the applications were granted. And therefore, the prohibition fell off. You know, that's why, you know, the media was saying that the department climbed down, department rescinds. There was no rescission because the reason for prohibition fell off, because the license, the 102 application got granted. You see, so that's what happened. So that was the reason why it happened like that, Jay, I agree.
No, I think the message that you have sent through to us is that you are cleaning this process.
so that we avoid the occurrence of the situation, which could be misinterpreted or misconstrued by whoever who looks at those facts. And also the undertaking that you are going to be working on the possible amendment on the MPRDA. It's a much welcome step from your side. We would be very interested to receive those amendments as soon as you are ready in terms of the entire processes, because we have, particularly when it comes to this matter of mineral rights. You are right. You are correct when you say that this is a highly contested terrain, in the sense that it has got a vested interest. We as Parliament also, we have got vested interest, because when we look at the development of the mineral resources of this country and the rising levels of poverty, we become concerned, because then it means that the mineral wealth in this country is not distributed equitably in order for us to can be able to deal with the immediate challenges that are facing the country, unemployment and the whole question of poverty. For instance, as Honorable Mare indicated, we've been to Northern Cape. What we have seen there makes us not to sleep at night, because you are confronted with abject poverty within the mining area. And as a result, communities there, they believe that this mining has just been there to ravage their environment, and nothing has been therefore plowed back. But also the other irony is that you have got a number of companies, major companies, that are holding these rights. As you say, that the rights differ in terms of periods, 20 years, 30 years, and so forth. But they are not using these rights, developing them. And all what they are doing, for instance, the case of Tibias is the case in point here. When we got back from there, we got in the news that DBS is calling for the declaration of interest by mainly contractors, so that they now, as DBS who are holding these mineral rights in that area, would now call for contractors to come and develop these rights on behalf of DBS, carry the entire risk, but at the same time, the share in terms of the proceeds will be a split of 60-40 in favor of a company. I'm not sure of the details, but it's to that effect. Now, you ask yourself a question, is it not DMR that is responsible to grant rights? Because if you can't use these rights, why don't you return them back to the state? So that if those contractors who are the residents of that particular province have got, firstly, the technical know-how and the financial muscle, and as well as they can get assistance from the department, can then develop these rights for the benefit of the people there, because the employment levels have gone down, the poverty levels have arisen, but meanwhile we have, some mineral reserves in abundance in that particular. So we'll have a particular interest in how you suggest we deal with that section, which deals with this whole question of rights, lapsing and also the whole notion of use it or lose it. Because at some point we need to confront that situation. Because it's an irony, even when we go to other platforms outside of Parliament, we're confronted with a situation where you are told that South Africa has been declared by international bodies such as Citigroup that we are the world's wealthiest country when it comes to mineral reserves. But on the other hand, Gini coefficients tells us that we are the world's most unequal society, particularly when it comes to wealth. Now, these two scenarios are incompatible, and therefore it means something has to be done. So Didi, we would support the steps that you are proposing on this document, the question of the amendments on the MPRDA. We also would support, this moratorium. To us, it will give not only you a breathing space to assess what has been taking place in terms of the granting and the applications pertaining to these licenses, but also it will help the public at large, because as you are saying here, you would make that report public that this is the picture that is obtaining in as far as the matter of licenses, those who are holding them. And the very important aspect that you are raising, that you have granted so many rights, but there are no mines. There are no new mines that come up, which means some of the people who are holding these rights, be it exploration, be it what, are basically, you know, keeping them safe so that at a particular point they can mortgage them. And it's something that definitely we would have to discourage. And indeed, the beefing up of your original offices. In our oversight, it was fortunate that you have given us one of your chief directors to be with us. Otherwise, our experienced members will tell you here that we would have been found wanting in that process. It was just an oversight. It's worse when it comes to public interacting with your offices in terms of these applications. There are a lot of accusations that fly all over the show. And indeed, your chief director was able to, on the spot, within the communities, to make an undertaking that I will come in and give you a workshop so that you understand how these processes work. So I'm saying, therefore, the beefing up of your original offices is going to assist us. We hope that this could be a permanent feature, because it's clear that junior officials on their own can bring you into this kind of situation that you are in right now. So therefore, honorable members, I think we did get the clarity, and I think what was important was to find out, are there any remedial actions that are proposed by the department that they would take these following steps in order for them to remedy the situation, and we find that on the paper. We would therefore, DC, wish that you would come back and appraise us of the progress that you have made. Because remember that you will still continue to be under surveillance. It would be interesting to see what is the industry's take on the steps that you have announced. And and therefore, at some stage, after a month or 2 months, we would decide, and then we will call you back to appraise us on the progress in as far as this is concerned. Of course, some of these matters, we will come across them as and when we conduct our oversight across, you know, the country. Thank you very much for your attendance once more. Honorable members, shall we take 5 minutes tea and then ask NUMSA, because we understand the documentation from SAWIMA is still being processed. Is that the case, SAWIMA? Yes. So we will take the delegation from NUMSA to address us, and then SAWIMA will come after NUMSA. Thank you very much. 5 minutes, please. On their views pertaining to the establishment of the state-owned mining company. We are continuing with these public hearings, as we are all aware, based on very clear concern from ourselves as public representatives and as Parliament that we need to work out a decisive intervention to deal with the challenges that we have on the ground, particularly when it comes to challenges of rising levels of poverty, unemployment, which has got serious implications and effects on a number of other areas such as health, education, and you name it. So we started this process quite some time ago, and it's now gaining momentum because there are quite a number of discussions in the public domain that are taking place, and therefore we would allow the delegation from NUMSA to introduce itself with a very clear understanding, colleagues, that ultimately, after these public hearings, we would want to visit one or two countries that have established and ran the state-owned mining companies to then draw experiences from those countries and look at the models that they are pursuing and see what model will suit South Africa. And after that, then we will come to a decision in terms of what piece of legislation must we enact as parliamentarians in order for us to make sure that the ideals that we have been pursuing are becoming a reality in terms of the state intervention in the mining industry. So, Nomsa, I understand that you are ready. Over to you, introduce yourself and take us through. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Seth Gina, the President of Nomsa. I'm with Woody Arun, the parliamentary researcher for Nomsa. The National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa welcomes this opportunity to present its submission on the issue of the state-owned mining company and trust that this engagement with the Portfolio Committee will assist in bringing the various constituencies together in a debate that has sparked all sorts of emotions as soon as the word nationalization is mentioned. This form of engagement also signals a shift on the part of government to provide a platform to stakeholders to raise questions related to the collective ownership of our country's resources and how best these may be procured to the benefit of our fragile economy. We just want to share with you the steps that we took from the Department of Minister Manuel National Planning Commission in terms of the population in our country, the employment rate in our country, and the unemployment, which is highly unacceptable. If you use the expanded definition, about 32% of South Africans who are eligible to work are out of work, and the Gini coefficient of 0.679, which is also not acceptable. We felt that we must touch on the background to this debate. Many organizations have already talked to yourself and in public. SAMDA has referred to the regulatory framework and historical development of the mining industry in South Africa. NUM, our colleagues, fellow COSATU affiliates, has already touched on the skewed nature of ownership in our economy, as well as the current level of state involvement and employee participation in the mining sector through investments and shareholding. And the calls to nationalize are not new. In 1955, already we know that the famous document of our movement, the Freedom Charter, said the following: the national wealth of our country, the heritage of all South Africans, shall be restored to the people. The mineral wealth beneath the soil, the banks and the monopoly industry shall be transferred to the ownership of the people as a whole. Recently in Polokwane, we had a watershed conference of the ruling party where the following resolutions were taken: that a developmental state must ensure that our national resource endowments, including land, water, minerals, and marine resources, are exploited to effectively maximize the growth, development, and employment potential embedded in such national assets, and not purely for profit maximization. And we also continue to say we need to strengthen the role of state-owned enterprises and ensuring that whilst remaining financially viable, SOEs, agencies and utilities, as well as companies in which the state has significant shareholding, respond to a clearly defined public mandate and act in terms of our overarching industrial policy and economic transformation objectives. We continue to say that In transforming the structures of production and ownership, we need to do the following, that the anti-monopoly and anti-concentration policy aimed at creating competitive markets, broadening ownership and participation by our people, addressing monopoly pricing, like what is happening with ArcelorMittal and the Pumba, and other forms of rent-seeking and anti-competitive behavior and overcoming barriers to entry that inhibit the growth of small enterprises, including strategies to increase competition by promoting the emergence of new players in both South Africa and the SADC region. And many of our monopolies are based on the nation's natural resources, and we must find ways and means to intervene, including through state custody of these resources on behalf of the people, and the regulation to ensure competitive pricing of inputs for our downstream manufacturing sector. Furthermore, the small size and relative isolation of our economy leads to monopolies in certain sectors which could be overcome by increasing regional economic integration with Southern Africa and the continent as a whole. NUMSA would like to comment on the Acelo and Kumba dispute. But before that, we just want to use the example of Acelo and Kumba dispute to argue a point that we think that there are a number of compelling reasons that favor for the nationalization of the mines. The recent dispute between ArcelorMittal and Kumba Iron Ore provides the basis for such reason. Given the strategic importance of iron ore and the steel mining industry in the country, NUMSA has repeatedly called on the state to reclaim ArcelorMittal, formerly ISCO, and to act decisively in the current dispute between ArcelorMittal and Kumba Iron Ore. A statement that we issued publicly a few weeks ago when this dispute started states clearly why do we think that it was uncalled for to have that dispute had we not privatized ISCO. Just on the eve of the democratic breakthrough, we all know that ISCO was sold to ArcelorMittal, and which was a big mistake. Many commentators have commented on the dispute. We just want to bring to the attention of the Portfolio Committee some of the comments. Donnelly from Melin Guardian Online on 16 July 2010 said the following about the dispute. The ongoing contractual dispute between steel giant ArcelorMittal and iron ore supplier Kumba Iron Ore has descended into an all-out war with South Africa's steel industry and the thousands it employs standing in the firing line. And writing for Business Day, Samson also in 2010 said the following, the government should recognize that separating ISCO from its iron ore deposits was a big mistake, as was its sale to a foreign competitor with conflicting interests. Another commentator, Krima, in 2010, wrote an article where he says, this dispute was a real opportunity for the state to intervene. He continued to say, but surely there is also sufficient room for government to seek to influence the outcome in the national interest. Alternatively, only narrow shareholder interests will be served. Another commentator, journalist Ingi Salgado, in the Business Report on 17 August 2010 said the following, ArcelorMittal fails to get serious about sustainability. Article said that the report lacks detail, only provides a list of stakeholders, but very little about engagement. While ArcelorMittal South Africa has been busy talking to the politically connected individuals in its BEE deal, it seems to have bypassed other people, such as those who breathe in the same smoke of the Fall Triangle, even as they live in squalor on the doorstep of the of the group funded by backpack plant. These people strike me as being more appropriate recipients of a BED. For some time now, ArcelorMittal has benefited from hefty steel prices. They've been using import parity pricing. And as Krima argues, the steel monopoly continues to maximize profits under a new price called the benchmark model. That is fundamentally the same as import parity pricing. There has been little noticeable difference between prices set under IPP and the benchmark model. Then there is the issue of beneficiation. According to my et al. In 2008, South Africa is well endowed with metals with other than reserves in platinum, group metals, and manganese, which is 80%. Coal is 70%. Gold and vanadium is 40%. In addition to the country, the country produces iron ore and coal. However, the writers have strong views on the use of IPP, that is import parity pricing, arguing that import parity pricing impedes growth and employment creation by the downstream sector. Coming from NUMSA, we have experience, we know the experience of the import parity pricing. We have seen a number of small companies that were providing employment in the area of Funded Bay Park closing down because of the price of steel from Acelo. I just want to bring to the attention of the Portfolio Committee another comment by Ramstuji in the Business Day on the 13th of August 2010, where he says that Kumba Mittal saga shows up real threats to South Africa's growth. The beneficiation policy in the act that is about to, where the DG was announcing that it will be amended, we just want to raise a comment about it that it does not define beneficiation as an objective of the Act. Maybe when it is brought here for amendments, the members, the honorable members should consider that part to see if we can't state clearly in the Act that beneficiation must be an objective of the Act. Minerals policy must become an active and integral instrument of the industrial policy. We all celebrated when the minister in the DTI, Minister Rob Davis, announced the IPEP 2. But we think that the IPEP 2 depends on many things, in particular issues of the natural resources that must drive that IPEP 2 to be successful. We also think that we are happy to hear the chairperson saying that this portfolio committee will visit some other countries where there is state ownership of some strategic companies. We just want to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee what is happening in Venezuela. We need to take lessons from some of our Latin American comrades, and the economic transformation of Venezuela has invaluable lessons for us here at home. According to Landa and Navarrete, Venezuelan constitutional provisions guarantee, amongst others, it defines clear and central state responsibilities in trade policy and the defense of national industries, that is Article 301 of their constitution, reserves oil's activity and other strategic activity for the state, that is Article 302 of their constitution, and it assigns the state a governing role in the development of sustainable farming and food security, that is Article 305 of their constitution. The guarantees that the text grants economic and social rights, in particular health, education, and social security, are equally significant. And then the Bolivarian alternative agenda illustrates the mixed nature, that is public-private, of Venezuela's new economic model underpinned by Chavez's vision of participatory democracy. It seeks a humanist, self-managing, and competitive economic model that is summarized by the phrase, as much market as possible and as much state as necessary. Let's pass this. So the calls to missionarize, I'm going towards conclusion, Chairperson. Thus far, it is difficult to pin the debate on any one position that supports nationalization, or for that matter, on any one position that is anti-nationalization. However, with reference to the ArcelorMittal Kumba dispute, CRIMA in 2010 agrees that the dispute provides an ideal opportunity for the state to intervene, and as CRIMA himself puts it, government should seize the initiative and move the debate away from the domain of shareholder value and into the realm of national development. Both the ANC Youth League and the National Union of Mine Workers have provided the stimulus for nationalization and appropriately targeted the mines as a starting point. Likewise, NUMSA believes that there is an urgent need to nationalize our mines and key sectors of our economy. While the form and content of nationalization might vary, some believe that public-private partnerships provide the catalyst for nationalization. Others have argued that nationalization isn't simply a case of state control, but that the underlying principle is one of social and collective ownership in which the state plays a leading role. The state would have to take cognizance of the fact that calls for nationalization would also require a complete overhaul of our macroeconomic policies, and that we would need to revisit sectors that have been privatized under the Growth, Employment and Redistribution Gear Policy of 1996. Nothing short of a radical departure from Gear can facilitate a shift to nationalization, and in this context, we call on the state to replace case-by-case privatization with case-by-case nationalization. Conservative journalists have ridiculed our calls for nationalization. Writing for the Mail and Guardian Online, Johnson in 2009 argues that renewed calls for nationalization emanating from the ANC Youth League and from Castro Ngobese, who used to be in the Young Communist League, who is now a NUMSA spokesperson. For a start, where would one find the money to buy them? Anything less than full compensation would start a panic among the foreign investors on whom South Africa depends. And where would one find the necessary human skills to run and manage them, and the prodigious sums required to sink new shafts? However, as NUMSA, we believe that with the right sort of political will, we can overcome these difficulties. True, there has to be more engagement on the form and content on nationalization, including the constraints imposed by the negotiated settlement of 1994. Compensation might be the burning issue, but we do believe that our country's developmental agenda should not be held to ransom by foreign investors. Thank you very much, Chairperson and the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much, NUMSA. Honorable members, there you've got the presentation by NUMSA. Let's engage with it. I'm noting Honorable Sonto, Honorable Ngele, Honorable Lucas. Okay. Over to you, Honorable Sonto.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, NUMSA, for this presentation. It shows that economically we still need to go a long way in terms of liberating our people. But one first point of clarity, your document is talking about a state-owned mining company. I hear the content is advocating nationalization. What is it that is that is on the table in terms of what you are proposing? If you are advocating for
the nationalization, I don't have a question as of now. But if you are advocating for a state-owned company, that vehicle, that economic vehicle, how would it be different from the current SOEs, that is the current state-owned enterprises that we have? Your SAAs, your whatever. The structure thereof. How do you envisage it? But it will depend on the earlier question of whether you are advocating for nationalization of the state-owned entity, mining entity. Let me leave it there, Chairperson. I will come back if there will be another round. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mangela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Son. I really thought I was dreaming or waking up from sleep, because on the 28th of May, we attended some people from the Portfolio Committee, whether it was a summit or a workshop run by NUMSA. And one of the resolutions, I might be wrong, but now I'm going to be strong because he's saying the same thing, was that the state should form a state-owned mine, a state-owned mine. But what I'm hearing today is totally different from that. Also, my question is, what is happening with NUMSA? Thank you.
Honorable Ngere, before they pose this question, because there seems to be this confusion between NUM and NUMSA. I'm picking it up from the workshop you attended. Did you attend the workshop of NUM? Because you will accuse them of something that they didn't do. But I think the question linked to what Honorable Sondo raised stands. Honorable Lucas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the issues that were brought up is beneficiation. And I think this is a very important issue. And one of the things that we have in South Africa, we're so rich with the natural resources. What did you talk about? We have most of them with us. But we pay so much for it. Even we talk about steel. Countries outside here manufacture cheaper than us because we do not get what we have on the ground at the correct price. We use external pricing. And I think that's a very, very important issue, which I would like to support, because we need to do something. We need to get beneficiation off the ground. We need to explain what do we mean by beneficiation, because we keep on dribbling with this here for many years. We talk about beneficiation, and honestly, we haven't done very much about it, because for some unknown reason, it's all of a sudden too expensive to beneficiate. So I must agree that we need to look at this, we need to see what we can do, and I just come back from China, and what I saw them doing there, the country without steel and producing, and the price was something that made me stand up and say, hey guys, we ought to wake up, and if we can do this together. The nationalization issue, I think we need to debate it in a greater detail. We need to understand it. We need to look at the state-owned companies. We really need to do this and do this with maturity, because it takes a few bad apples to destroy everything, because we cannot just write off all investors. And our population, compared to America, for example, it's much less. We can't consume our own goods. If we were opened right up into Africa, it would be another story where we can say we can manufacture and we have a market. So I think it needs greater debate.
Thank you very much. Would you care to respond to those first numbers, and then let's see if there are other questions that would arise?
Okay, then thank you very much. We really welcome the question. The first question from, I think, Honorable Sonto, about how will it look like? Will it be run like the current SOEs? I just want to say that it does seem like in South Africa the media has succeeded to rubbish the SOEs as companies that are not run very well because they belong to the state. And in the process, they've even isolated even some SOEs that are run efficiently to sound as if they do not belong to government. For example, I just want to cite SA Express, which is one growing airline in South Africa, which is owned by the state. But you don't hear the media saying that that belongs to the state because it is run efficiently. And then when there is a mistake in one SOE, in one parastatal, they then want to present that as a reason for not getting more companies under the state control. It's a debate. Even the economists, the Lumkile Mondis of this world, they go on radio and say that thing, that the state does not have capacity to run SOEs, and I don't think we should accept that. And I think at the level of parliament especially, maybe people, ordinary people, can believe that. But I don't think that parliament should believe that kind of lies. We think that the state has got the capacity to deploy people, to train people, to run companies under the control of the state. I mean, ISCO itself, when it was sold to ArcelorMittal, that company was belonging to the state. So there has been nationalization in South Africa. The only difference between the nationalization that was done by apartheid government is that it was for the benefit of the tiny minority of South Africans. And now we are calling for nationalization that will benefit the majority of our people. Because what we must say is that there has been nationalizations elsewhere and in other countries that did not benefit the people. And what we're calling for, we're calling for nationalization that will benefit the majority of people of the country. That we should be careful, because it can happen that you can nationalize and then a minor section of the population benefits, and that is wrong. As NUMSA, we will not support that kind of nationalization. And we think that we must push for excellence. I mean, people that are appointed into SOEs and the boards and them, they must push for excellence. Just like excellence must be excellence in the private sector, but there must be excellence in state-owned enterprises also. On the issue of beneficiation, I think it's really important. I'm happy that Honorable Lucas went to China and saw what they're doing in China. As I said, in Funded Bay Park, there used to be many smaller workshops that were producing using the steel that they were buying from ISCO at the time, which is now ArcelorMittal. And when ArcelorMittal bought ISCO, there were conditions that were put in terms of the price of steel that they should on-sell it onto the smaller producers, and they didn't follow that. Hence the problem of all those smaller factories closing down because they couldn't afford the steel. I think those were the two questions there, Chairperson.
Follow up, Honorable Sonder and Honorable Charlie.
Yes, I read into what you are saying, President of NUMSA, that we are talking nationalization here. Because that was the first question. I want to correct you because your response is reading into what I said, that I believe that the current SOEs are not working. But all I was asking for is a structure, whether it's going to be similar to the current SOEs or it will be something different. It would be a different vehicle that would be built for the much needed economic growth. That is what I wanted to get. If we nationalize, we are changing the economic structure of the country. Would you say to us as Parliament that the current current political scenario that we have is allowing that kind of an economic arrangement? I'm talking about the state. I'm trying to say only in a changed state would you be able to change the economy. That's the only question.
Thank you. Honorable Charlie?
About the discussion on nationalization. My problem is not nationalization. I hold a position about nationalization. But this is not for this meeting. My problem is that since this started from the Youth League and joined by the Union, they all talk about nationalization of mines. They say nothing about land. That's my worry. These mines are on the land. On somebody's land. Nothing is said about that. They all talk about the nationalizing mines. And two, they don't tell us how are these mines going to be nationalized. And if you look at this discussion about nationalization of the mines, started after the economic depression last year, where most of the mine owners lost millions of billions. And then from there, this talk about nationalizing the mine started. My question is, in general, I'm not necessarily referring to norms in general. Is it an honest nationalization? Or are some people who make noise about nationalization are used by certain elements to salvage their property? And so that now we must all beat drums about this solution to help those elements or those people to save their wealth which has gone down through the economic depression. I was saying yesterday, comrades from NUMSA were discussing that one British economist said, in economy, there is always a secret hand in operation. There is always a secret hand in operation. So when this pursuit of nationalization started, I immediately saw this secret hand in operation, which wanted to save
my words or their words. There is also, he asked a question, but he left it halfway, Comrade Sondo, about what happened and all that. But to me here, we are talking about economic transformation. That's what they say is in mind. Can it really transform, can really transform the economy without transforming the social system of this country or of any country? Or we are talking about changing jockeys, but this jockey must be changed, or this horse must be ridden by somebody else. Because this what is the authority? So we change it in a good stage. I will not go for that rubbish of intended to save the country. You are sometimes seeing that there is that intended by your seat. So, but let's make noise so that we get the support. Tolkien, I said I'm not referring to Nomsa when I say this, but I'm stating my fear that have you been able to check thoroughly whether you are not riding on a bandwagon? Yeah. So I have those concerns, and this nationalization must benefit who? We say it must benefit people, but how is it going to benefit people? It's well and good to say it will benefit people. How is it going to benefit people? That's also my worry. It sounds very nice to say this nationalization must benefit people, it doesn't. I would love to know how are people going to benefit. It's not the first time that there is nationalization, or we talk about nationalization. That in South Africa we talk about nationalization. Apparently, the regime had nationalized a lot of things, but the majority of people did not benefit. And yet, many things were nationalized. If I may take another bad example, Hitler had nationalized almost everything, iron and steel, mines, you name it. And that money was used to buy guns that were killing people in Europe, thanks to Stalin and Soviet Union, that people were saved. Yeah. It's bad, but it's not the issue to be here. So, let's be clear about this nationalization.
Thank you. Senior members, I have allowed the line of questioning deliberately. The subject matter before the committee is state-owned mining companies.
we are not discussing as yet nationalization. But organizations such as NOMSA and any other person are free to raise their views that, yes, we understand you're talking about the state-owned mining company, but the best route is this. But I will not, with due respect, honorable members and yourselves, NOMSA, allow a discussion where you begin to define nationalization, the impact of nationalization. If we come to that stage, we will do so in the course of the processes that will unfold. For now, what is before us is to hear your views on the possibilities of the establishment of a state-owned mining company, and which you attempted to debate, to discuss in your document, quoting a number of even media reports, because I think the intention and purpose is the same. But I would want to guard against us getting deeper into discussing nationalization because you raised it. Because I'm sure these questions are a response to the excitement that you have raised in the document regarding nationalization and members, wanting to clarify. But I think it would be proper for us not to engage in that debate for now until the right moment arrives, if it will have to be engaged. So for now, yes, confine yourself to the subject matter before us, and I'll then summarize after that. Over to you, NOMSA.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I just want to respond to the question that was raised about clarity, and I hear what you're saying, that we shouldn't really go into the details of this. But I just want to respond to something here about this thing about clarity as to whether we're talking about a state-owned mining company. Now, it's very difficult for us, and this is our position, is that for us to sit here and talk about a state-owned mining company in the singular, because it's not something that we're not just talking about one entity here. We're talking across a number of different sectors and quite a few different entities. And we've located that very carefully in the Polokwane document. So, and I think the Polokwane document does stress and lays a lot of emphasis on the how best we procure resources, our natural resources, for the benefit of our people and the economy as a whole. Now, I don't imagine, I hear what you're saying, that we could sit and have a long debate, and this is probably would never end, is that we could sit and debate as to whether a state-owned mining company is the same as a nationalized or a nationalized public utility. And sometimes they're not one and the same thing. They might appear to be one and the same thing to some people, but others have different views. And this is why it's very difficult in a forum like this to actually begin to get into that kind of debate. Still, NOMSA has put its position, and we've pitched our position on the, and that is why we took the Arkelor Mittal Kumba, not because of our own particular union's interest in the matter, because you must remember our members are affected by this dispute. The whole thing about this dispute, and it's something that we've raised over many, many years, is that they've had a kind of monopoly, kind of holding interest on the price of a very basic commodity, which should be spread so that downstream industries benefit from this. And they will sort of build an economy where we don't want to see this, our raw materials leaving in a very unbeneficiated form, so they get exported or they get sold locally at very high prices. Now, clearly there's room for the state to intervene here, right? So we feel, when we looked at this whole Arkelor, not just because it's been topical in the newspapers over the last couple of weeks, and we don't really buy everything that the media says, but the thing is this, is that I think the media has also at the same time raised critical issues for debate. And this is why we felt we need to bring some of the debate here. The thing about beneficiation is that we have to look at the thing in its entirety. It starts, and value must be added throughout every process, and that's not been happening in this country. Is that value, we've got to work towards it. It's not going to happen overnight. But you have to work towards it, ensure that value is added throughout the entire process of production. So we have to work very hard to do that. And I think we need to look at that very, very carefully. So, again, just to round up on this, it's not a deliberate attempt to try and make a distinction between nationalization and a state-owned mining company in its singular form. But I think we have raised that the form and content might vary. Much more engagement on the matter. Seriously, there'd have to be much more engagement on the matter, not just in this forum, but I think at other levels of government, as well as civil society, and perhaps then we'd be able to come to a kind of clearer picture as to what we want. We did hear about the portfolio committee wanting to go and look at examples in other countries, and maybe that would be useful. And we use Venezuela as an example because we think it's closer to home. Right? Venezuela State Oil, before Chavez came in, was a state-owned company, but it worked differently. And it never ensured that the resources were evenly distributed to the benefit of its people. So he came in and he turned it around a bit, and he characterized five sectors. Now, I'm not saying that's the best example or the best model, but clearly there are models that we must look at. The last point, and I'll hand over to the president of UNSA, Comrade Cedric Gina, to raise, is that there's a number of political issues which were raised, and we can't go into that here. And I think it's best that the president respond to some of those issues. So I'll hand over to Comrade Cedric.
Okay. Honorable Nisali, if MDR is the shortest route to socialism, as far as we are concerned, as NUMSA, nationalization is the shortest route to the state owning companies. We're not only saying the state must own companies in the mining sector only. Even before the call by the NCU clique, the trade unions in this country have been calling for nationalization for strategic companies. For example, Sasol, we've raised it long time ago that we think that Sasol should belong to the state. When the issue of the price of petrol was a pertinent issue in our country, we said that it's unfortunate that we've got Sasol, a strategic resource in our country that is in the private hands, and that is also using the import parity pricing in terms of the crude oil. So when we talk about nationalization as trade unions, you should rest assured that we're not representing an elite elsewhere that has lost some money because of a BE deal that has gone wrong. So we do not represent BE people here. We think that the state must consider, for example, the previous Minister of Trade and Industry, Mandi Simphahla, in the IPEP 1 document, was raising an issue about starting a new steel company that will bring competition so that there may be competition against ArcelorMittal, against ISCO. And he brought that to NEDLAC, and we were engaging him, and we were saying, Minister, but why must the state start a new steel company? Is it because you have failed to control the price of steel from ArcelorMittal or what? So I think as a country we are too cautious about what the foreign investors are going to say. And sometimes we become too cautious. I mean, in this committee you are talking about the MPRDA. It was opposed. When the state wanted to take over those mineral rights, it was opposed by the industry. But here we are today. It is accepted that those resources beneath the soil belong to the state. Now, I think as a country, we should be bold in some cases and take decisions and say that we will see how those decisions get implemented. And as I say, there are state companies like Alesco, the last time I checked, was belonging to the state. So there's already a format, Honorable Sondo, of how these companies are managed. But it's upon you as legislators. You can say that we think that the model that we're using appointing the boards and everything is not the best. Maybe we want to improve it. We can question that. We can say, are the boards of these companies representative of South Africans, of all sectors of our society? And we can raise that thing. Maybe we can say, in order for these companies to really benefit our people, maybe our people, the civil society, our people must be representative in their boards, so that when they take decisions, then you at least have people who represent the broader society, not just the elite. So I think I've covered the questions, Chairperson. I'm not going to. I'll talk outside about how Stalin helped the world.
I see Honorable Makagule, you got a burning is smaller.
Yeah, it's just a small thing, Chairperson. President, on this issue of nationalization, some of us, we are members of parliament. We all of us, we are the members of parliament. We compound in the policies of the government. Some of us were supporting the nationalization. So bear in mind that, as you see, when you are speaking, I was feel very nice when you speak, and then enjoying, because some of us really, we are supporting the nationalization. But as a member of parliament, there is a policy in front of us. There is a policy that we're supposed to do it. There is a resolution that has been taken in Polokwane. We are following it. As a discussion document, really, some of us, we really support the nationalization. Thank you.
The declaration of interest. Very well. No, Nomsa, I think, thank you very much for presenting to us and interacting with us in terms of the questions that you have answered. And we can say this, that on the issue of beneficiation, we are taking note of your call, that in the event that the amendments of the FRDA come before we finalize the process of state-owned mining companies, we would take note that part of the objectives of the FRDA should include beneficiation, as you have suggested, because also we are concerned that the process of establishing the beneficiation industry is slow. And we understand that there are those in the industry who support beneficiation, there are those in the industry who are happy with the current arrangement of exporting raw material, because it generates immediate revenue for them, and indeed for us, there's a bigger picture when it comes to beneficiation. As you listen to Honorable Lucas, that we're looking at job creation. We're told in other countries they create substantial number of jobs, and we would want to tap into that potential, because we're faced with serious challenges on unemployment across the country. So therefore, this is one field that, as a committee, we would not lower our guards in terms of ensuring that there is a strategy on beneficiation, and that beneficiation actually happens in the country. And the example of the ArcelorMittal and the steel prices, we are engaging on this matter of the dispute on one hand through the joint arrangement between us and trade and industry, but also engaging on the whole question of the operations of these companies from the side of the Mineral Resources Portfolio Committee, that we would want to see a drastic change in the manner in which things are done
For example, it is in our public documentation and information here that when we engaged them sometime last week, ArcelorMittal made serious threats that if the deal between them and Kumba does not concluded in a manner that will be satisfactory to them, there's a potential that they would close down their operations, retrench workers and so forth. Immediately we had to say to them, but you forget that you have inherited a state asset. Whatever you did to it, you found an asset which was established through taxpayers' money. And therefore, if you are unable to put it into good use, we would want it back at some point. I'm sure they've taken that message seriously because afterwards there were indications of some kind or the other. But I'm saying therefore that we're keeping tab in terms of this development. And therefore, thank you very much. You will be informed. We are going to deliberate as the committee over all the submission which we have received and the study tours that we're going to undertake. We'll extend invitation to those who participated in the public hearings once we finalize our internal processes on the study tour, so that if you are able and also are you have resources, you can then join us into that study tour, so that when we come back, we reflect from the common basis, and whether that process will culminate into a broader roundtable debate of all stakeholders. It's a matter that we will look into the future, so that when we come to finalization, so you must have read that the minister yesterday, Minister of Mineral Resources, announced that she is approaching cabinet with very clear views on the same subject matter. Now, we would expect some form of legislative framework that will emanate from that process. Whether it will be, within the amendments of the MPRDA, or will it be a standalone act that will establish this vehicle, we will see as and when they come back from cabinet and present it to parliament. And indeed, we would then decide what form. Because this is a matter that attracts vast interest across the country. We will not simply go through it in your otherwise normal legislative process. We might, in welcoming your suggestion, look at extraordinary measures where we might have a one-day conference to discuss the subject matter. I don't know. The committee will decide. But thank you very much. We are happy with your submission. Thank you. Sawima, would you want to come and take the stage, please?
Honourable Members, it would appear that Sawima is ready to talk to us and on the subject matter, and we, yes, let's hand over to you. Introduce yourself and take us through.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Alice Patudi, the National Chairperson of South African Women in Mining. Next to me is Nolutando Langeni, the CEO of our investment wing, which is South African Women in Mining Investment Holdings. And next to her is Mrs. Stokwe, Tandisa Stokwe, the chairperson of SAWIMA in the Western Cape. I firstly want to thank the honorable members for inviting us for the first time since I became the member of SAWIMA 10 years ago. And it's a great honor for us to be here, even though we were here last week, and we said it is befitting for us to come over this week. And we want to thank you heartily. Before we go into the core business of the day that you requested us to come and present, we briefly want to state who we are. I'm going to start with the Section 21 company, which is SAWIMA, which was launched in 1999, and women have played a peripheral role in the development of our economy. Today, we can proudly say as SAWIMA that we have tried to put ourselves at the center of economic development in this country. As such, we have vigorously driven the process of women empowerment in the mining sector. The core purpose of SAWIMA, we have identified gaps within the industry as evidenced by a mining charter in relation to participation of women. To create interventions to address these challenges, to create a forum in which women are able to share experiences, challenges, and success, and thus form a haven where learning is shared and to ensure sustainability. Going back also to who we are, as mentioned earlier on, that we are a certain company whose primary focus is to develop women within the mining sector. One of the pillars of the mining charter is to empower women through mineral resources underground. And I can proudly say we did that. We are an organization that has pioneered change in the mining industry and will be a future driver of positive change. SAWIMA's strategic focus for 2010 and beyond will be able to maximize all our achievements with a special emphasis on beneficiation in order to create. Since last week when we were here in Parliament, beneficiation was the core subject that it was presented to the committee. And I would like to state that the Department of Mineral and Resources has recently launched a long-awaited beneficiation strategy, a product of an interdepartmental task consisting of representatives from all departments, for example, DMR itself, Department of Trade and Industry, Science and Technology, Public Enterprise, National Treasury, as well as the Presidency, to highlight, the need for a collaborated effort to successfully accelerate the implementation of mineral resources, mineral commodities, and beneficiation agenda. As we know that India is one of the countries that when it comes to polishing and diamonds, it's leading. And, it's the country that, we can take, example. We can actually copy what they are doing. Currently, we have a number of women that are not employed, and they are still when it comes to diamond cutting and polishing. So we saw it, we actually had advocated since the inception of this board to say, we need to introduce women into beneficiation. The core purpose of us, we have identified gaps within the industry as identified by the mining charter. I'm sorry that I went back to the slide, sorry. Our goals, we have launched and developed a mentorship and coaching program which will seek to build on personal and professional skills of our members, to institute a research process which will provide SAWIMA with accurate information on progress of transformation in the mining industry. We have one of the goals, participation in the industry, barriers to entry for women, level of participation for women, and also to develop an HIV and AIDS policy and forge partnership within mining houses to ensure that no SAWIMA member will be discriminated against. Our achievement, as we'll be celebrating 10 years in mining, of which we should have celebrated last year, but we are still saying we are going to celebrate in style. We have achievements. We have facilitated engagement with mining houses to ensure that compliance to meet the objective of mining charter. We've met with every mining house seeking to position ourselves. We have partnered with a number of mining houses whereby, you know, we as the board, we saw it befitting that we are trained, especially when it comes to corporate governance, because, you know, in 2008 we just said it's time for us to have a turnaround strategy for this company. We have we are sharing the vision of what is it that we want to be. We have created opportunities for partnership, for example, procurement. In 2008, I remember we had requested a number of mining houses to converge in one hall where we had more than 500 women throughout the country for these companies to unpack their procurement spend. As you know, that some of the mining houses, their procurement spend is more than R1 billion. And if you put a stick and measure how many women have been empowered, you find that it's not really to our satisfaction. And when it comes to training and development, we have partnered with MQA, whereby more than 1,000 women have been trained since the inception of this board. And we proudly announced that, you know, women have been trained in different mining sectors courses, whereby, you know, we saw it befitting that there's no way that we say women are in our organization and they don't know anything that is mining related, the language that is spoken in the mining sector. So we did that successfully. We have also partnered with our some companies. As you know, that for the past 2 years there was an economic meltdown, but we made it a point that, you know, we negotiate with other companies. For example, PPC. We are part of PPC, which we are the beneficiaries of. And to date, as we put this presentation before you, is that, you know, we managed to secure grant for some project which SAWIMA members are involved in. We have a project in KwaZulu-Natal which is called Indred, where women are manufacturing ceramic. And we said, you know, what product... The products that they are currently manufacturing are not of international standard. And what we did, we have outsourced the services of MinTech, whereby they are going to give them a proper training, which is going to be paid by PPC, whereby their product, their final product at the end of the day, will be of international standard. And we said that will be our first pilot. It's actually our first pilot project. And we'll go around provinces where we identify projects within our members, especially in the rural areas. Some of our achievements, we have created a credible database which, you know, have details of every single member, because when we go back to the mining houses, especially after our procurement workshop, to say we are not finding any joy that women have not been empowered, they said they don't have our database. And that's when we requested each and every member to send their profile and also the company profiles, especially those that are involved in business. As you know, that SAWIMA is not just women who are it does not consist of just women who are aspiring miners or who are in possession of prospective rights, but we have a number of women who are involved in different sectors. We have also, as already mentioned, that we have a listing of services offering individual skin expertise and experiences. We have also provide a listing of corporate partners along with a need analysis, for example, professional staffing, procurement spend, of which I've mentioned earlier on, and we have successful stories of women who have obtained prospecting rights, mining rights in various minerals. And, you know, there are provinces that, you know, are mining hub, and that's where, you know, the main focus, the most focus actually was on all those provinces for women to tap into. But we are not saying women from other provinces where there are no opportunities could not apply for prospecting rights, because South Africa is one, it belongs to all of us. In conclusion to my first presentation, we are saying let us therefore harness the energy of young coupled with experience and patience of those that have been in mining sector for the past 10 years, encourage the matter of business as usual, and what we have achieved in the field of mining will be a massive boon to all mankind. I'm going to pause here and allow my colleague, Ms. Langeni, to proceed with the investment section of our company.
You can press yours, the one in front of you, which is going to be closer to you. Thank you very much, Chairman. I am now going to talk about the investment wing of our company. My name is Nolithando Langeni, the CEO of South African Women in Mining Investment Holdings. As my introduction, Sawimi was registered in October 2003. It is registered as a PTY company according to the Companies Act in the RSA. This is a vehicle whereby shareholders can procure shares in the company. It is compliant according to the Companies Act and observe all corporate governance regulations. It is an empowerment vehicle for women, and the number of shares is directly proportional to the amount the shareholders pay for their shares. Our business, obviously, is mining business. And we also take advantage of related investments within this sector of mining. We also do a lot of procurement opportunities if available, and we also form joint venture partnerships with companies that have got similar synergies to our company. Requirements from our shareholders is that, obviously, in order for us to be able to penetrate the market, our shareholders must provide us with their profiles, and also they must submit the names of the beneficiaries in all situations, so that should there be problems, we can know the next of kin when there is an investment, and obviously to attend to annual general meetings according to Companies Act. Our structure. The structure of Sawimi consists of the following. There is 15% that is reserved for SAWIMA shareholders, the national chairperson of SAWIMA, Alice Patuli, has taken us through as to what SAWIMA, the Section 21 company, is. It is also a corporate social responsibility company of the investment arm. So some of the women in both urban and rural areas cannot pay for the shares. So the board of SAWIMA has seen it fit that there must be a 15% for that corporate social responsibility aspect. And then the 60% is reserved for those shareholders that have got money that can procure, that can pay for their shares. There is 5% as an incentive scheme for both management as well as the staff that work in the offices of SAWIMA, and 20% has been reserved for a strategic partnership which we have not yet obtained. The board of SAWIMA, according to the Companies Act, consists of a chairman who is Shelly Mabusela, non-executive according to the Companies Act, myself, a financial director who is a CA, and then obviously according to New King 3 in corporate governance, that she must head the audit committee as well as the finance committee plus the REMCO committees. Alice Patudi to represent that section 15%. Directors Zwiswa Mkhatu, Melody Kweba, Lucy Ngobeni, who is our training executive that sits on the M2A board, and Director Kimboni Mugwena from the Free State. And according to the Companies Act, to ensure compliance and to ensure that the resolution gets written correctly, we have got an attorney, Thabo Kwinana, who also is a legal advisor to the company. Not included here, we have outsourced the services of our corporate financial advisors who help the CEO to put together information for purposes of securing investments. Those are the CAs, they are called the Afropulse Group, and our auditors are Goboto auditors, who also advise us that for purposes of tax compliance, they will subcontract to Deloitte and Touche. Our investments to date, we were assisted by government to get shares in Ingwala Resources. If I remember well, in 2003, the shareholding then was 0.00023. Two zeros. But we were very grateful because the entity was vendor funded, and I will talk later. In fact, it came, the vendor funding, the shares were called back at the end of last year. Fortunately, because we've got our corporate financial advisors, they then evaluated the company and recognized that in relation to 7.5 million which were lent, there was value because the shares now were worth 15 million. So not only was SAWIMA instrumental in assisting its shareholders, but we helped the whole consortium of black people through those corporate advisors. And then we liquidated our debt. We are waiting for our amount to come to us. And then Exaro Resources, at least the shareholding is improving. We have got a 3.5%. That is for the Section 21 company, as well as 3.45% for the investment wheel. And altogether, we also have got some 5% that is held in a men's consortium called Airbantu, and a chairperson and a CEO of SAWIMA manages that special purpose vehicle called what is the name by the way? Basadi Bakopano, that consists of a consortium called Nozala and all those other people. So indeed, as Sawimi, we are happy, and also the CEO of Sawimi sits on the Exaro board, and quite a number of companies where we hold shares. Our other investment is in another mining company called Kitchen Energy. We have formed a joint venture there, and we paid a small amount of money. Our corporate, our technical partner is Blue Chip Mining, that assists us with exploration, and we had to ask our shareholders to put money further for the payment of the Sasol Inzalo shares at the value of 2.5 million. And the moment we finished with that, then we saw an advert that there was a public offer. Our shareholders still came back and raised a further 1 million, which we transferred over there. And then, just as an interim measure, we also have got a 12% in a paint company called O'Grady's Paint. And it's a nice investment because we only were required to put 90,000 for an investment of 1.6 million today. And we have got prospecting licenses for 3 platinum mines in the Limpopo, and we are seriously looking for an investor. And that is going to be developed further when we come to our views about a government mining company. Well, there are 7 iron ore and manganese mines in Northwest as well as Northern Cape where we have obtained prospecting licenses. Well, our pending deals, we had also stated an interest in the Jagersfontein deal. We have listened with interest to the discussion this morning, and we are eyeing seriously a 10% interest in coal mining farms in KwaZulu-Natal. The discussions are pending, and we also are busy deliberating on a project, Falcon, whereby Rio Tinto is liquidating 30% of some coal in the Limpopo region. So all that is pending. Now, I would like to come to what we were asked to do this morning or this afternoon, which in fact is an aspect that is very, very dear to our hearts because it is definitely to try to leverage the playing field as far as the mining resources in the RSA are concerned. While the chairperson is still struggling with somebody else's computer, I will just be going through to save the time. Well, Sawimi's input on the state-owned mine is as following. Our objective is that we see that our government has been a very important aspect in this regard. And obviously, their main responsibility or objective should be to hold the strategic mineral resources in the RSA so that those could be for the benefit of all the people that reside in the RSA. And then the second strategic objective should be they have a strategic passive equity holding in operating business entities. And having said here last time when there was a company that was government owned I think that also even strengthens our views in that regard. And then thirdly, why must we say that they have a strategic passive equity holding in operating business entities? We see the government being, as it is, the custodian of the mineral resources in the RSA, according to the mining charter, presently, obviously, they have got a role to ensure that they drive transformation. And this morning, it was also alluded to the fact that it is the present regulation at the moment is just left to the mining houses' conscience as to whether they want to involve BEE or not. So if the government has got, is the owner of some of the mining houses or is the owner of some of the mines, they definitely will have a direct responsibility in driving transformation that will benefit all the inhabitants of the RSA. They definitely will be an investor because as it is, though I've mentioned all those things, it's very difficult, Mr. Chairman, to secure funding. And also, coming to our past, having been so deprived for a long time, despite our education and all having been earning poor salaries, it is a joke when we get asked to provide guarantees. So in order for us to procure wealth, by the way, I don't know as to whether I did say that our organization consists of women in the 9 provinces of the RSA, both urban and rural. And they are women who definitely are the previously disadvantaged community. So for us, really, to be asked to pay for some of these aspects is very difficult. But I pay tribute to the women who are investing in our company. So we definitely are going to benefit should the government hold some of the mines. And as we heard this morning, some people have got a bank of mining licenses and prospecting licenses, and they are doing nothing about it. So I could not be more happy as the CEO of the investment arm to hear that there is facilitation by you, Mr. Chairman, of an audit through the DG of Department of Mineral Resources. Thirdly, the government definitely will provide direction to the company and mining industry as a whole. At the moment, they are the legislators in that regard. But if they are the owners of the assets, they will have a direct input in directing the activities. Though I've said they will be the passive owners because their function is to govern, but they definitely will ensure that other people are subcontracted to run those mining companies. They will have an influence in decision-making to the benefit of the broader South African community. They will not be viewed as a BE partner, but as an institutional investor or majority shareholder while still promoting the requirements of maybe 26% or even 50% dependingly of minimum BEE shareholding. That, I think, will enhance transformation in a legislated and controlled fashion in this sector. Obviously, the government is well-resourced in terms of human and financial capital to execute this mandate because they are the government and they definitely will bring about a regulation to ensure. We also are going to be having examples whereby some funding institutions have been initiated by government. There's going to be disinvestment in an investment to be done in accordance with set guidelines. They will promote black and women participation in mining. They will promote black employee wealth creation, depending on where the mining opportunity takes place. There will be public announced opportunities to ensure a broader based participation. We see them, the government of the RSA, as being in a position to operate both within and outside the RSA. And we looked at the Chinese model, whereby China has got some of the mines that are run by government, not in a nationalized manner, but that there are some mines that are run by government, and we thought that that was an attractive model to simulate. And moreover, the government can secure resources for South Africa externally, which a group of 1,000 women cannot do because of their minimum resources to achieve this. They will promote value-enhancing activities within the mining sector, and they will be innovative because, as it is, there is very little prospecting that is taking place to determine some of the mineral wealth that is still underground. Some of the countries are spending a lot on exploration to expand on the mineral reserves that are obtainable in the archives of the Department of Mineral Resources, as well as the related stakeholders. They will do research and development. They will definitely enhance and enforce the achievement of beneficiation so that a lot of our mineral wealth does not go outside and then come back and be sold to South Africans at an exorbitant price. Obviously, if the government has got mining licenses, they definitely will see it prudent to improve the infrastructure in the form of roads. I come from KwaZulu-Natal, and I looked at the problem at Richards Bay Minerals, whereby the rail development is not sufficient, with resultant transport problems and all. And if the government has got, all that is definitely going to come to an end. They will invest across the broad spectrum of mining activity, assist PE companies, and also I must not hesitate to say we thank our government, because we are even seated here because of the strides they have taken, to be involved in earlier mining, because as it is now, we can only come at an expensive stage where a bankable feasibility has already been done for people that could have only paid up to 500 rand to secure a prospecting and a mining license. But when we come now, when the bankable feasibility has already been achieved, we jump into the bandwagon at a very expensive stage. They will ensure the development of all mineral wealth and resources in the RSA, and will invest heavily in exploration activities. The key issues to be considered are the line of executive authority. The Department of Mineral Resources, as we saw this morning, and the Department of Public Enterprises, and any other regulatory authorities which the government uses as its arm to achieve its function. Obviously, the level of disclosure and accountability is very important, and I was very happy this morning when I sat and listened to Mr. Sandile Noxina stating now that there will not be any question of people saying that there's no transparency in the manner in which the mining licenses are issued. There will be ability and parameters within which to source funding for investment purposes, and the government will apply legislative processes in a transparent manner, as it is evidenced by the regulations that are there. And I pay tribute to the fact that there are going to be some aspects of the MPRDA regulations or laws that are going to be changed, and others. Listed or unlisted entities, depending on how, and the dominant favoritism, of course, of the previously disadvantaged people, who could some of them be having poor performances, will no longer be discouraged when the government will be owning those mines. Because we are tired of excuses of people saying we cannot get those people, they cannot even communicate, and you name it. International cases, I want to take the committee through you, Mr. Chairman, to a pilot study of what is happening in India, whereby 100% of government ownership of a coal mine called India LTD. This is the world's largest coal company, 10% of disinvestment to the public, of which 5% gets sold to employee of the company and the retail investor. And then there is 99.59% investorship in Hindustan Copper, 10% disinvestment in the horizon. China has got another shining example, listed and unlisted government companies. I am not going to include Botswana because we all know the Botswana success story, that they have got a shining example. Focus on oil and minerals, internal and external investment focus by our government. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, if the state could take over some of the mines, and with the mineral resources being a God-given right to all the South Africans, and with the government's capability, we definitely can facilitate job creation and alleviate the scourge of poverty and disease that we see in our community. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Sawima. That is, should that be all from you? Thank you. Put that thing off, please. Well, honorable members, there you got it. Let's engage. With submission from Sawima, let me stand this side. Come, Honorable Lucas, Honorable Magabule, Honorable Sonto, in that session.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. I think congratulations to the organization, because instead of talking, they're doing, they're working. But the very important issue is finance, because you could get a prospecting license, which is relatively easy. But to stay from move from prospecting to mining, that is the difficult section of this exercise, because no bank or no one wants to come and help you, because the risk is so big. Once you've got your mining right, all the banks come around you and want to help you, and they want to take the cream at that time with no effort put in. So I think you've got a very, very good case, and we need to work with it. I think we need to look at it, and we must talk to the department. How can they come on board to help us get over this first thing?
Thank you very much, Honorable Magagule.
Thank you, Chairperson. When it's coming to the matter, I'm very linear. But there is this thing. Unfortunately, Chairperson, I was one to ask that we are dealing with SAWIMA or we are dealing with SAWIMI. Then when you present, you said you spread in the entire provinces, in the entire country. And when I just put my memory correct, there is some women in the Western Cape who said we are the members of SAWIMA, and today you said you taking care of all those women that are in poverty life like disadvantaged. When they came, actually, I don't want to see a woman crying, but they cry in front of us. They said, we don't have any place to go. We've been looted even this little thing that we had. Of which to us, they said, no. We think that you, as a members of parliament, you can assist us. Unfortunately, today, when I check the agenda, the SAWIMA is here. Actually, I'm speaking with the CEO and the chairperson. And then you said there is a representative of that province. Well, whereas when they presented themselves, there was a chairperson, and there was a secretary, and the members of the province in SAWIMA. All of them, they are suffering. Some of them, they were staying in the township. But because of the SAWIMA program, because they go around and do whatsoever instructed by the SAWIMA at a national level, and then they even sell their own houses and go to stay in the shacks. And it is very much unhealthy. Then I will need, today you are here with us, and then I will need the response and try, because I know women, they are more in solving problems rather than to create a lot of problems. And then I will need the answer on that. But also, we have to recommend, no matter it is not, we recommend the presentation, the last presentation, that you table on us, no matter it not show us that is it the nationalization or is it the state-owned mining, but we knew that the women used to come with their own things which maybe you can put there and make the way or pave the way with it. So we recommend that. But really, really, if things happen to us, we can't just be quiet about that. The women who said we are the members of SAWIMA, but we look at everything that we had, and then we'll need the answer for that, I think.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sondo.
Chairperson, thank you very much. There were three presentations, and I think I will confine myself to the last one. Whilst I cannot stop the urge to raise a few interest questions on some of the areas that gave an insight as to who are we talking to, but talking to the subject matter, on the top of the page you are advocating for, or you are advancing your views on the state-owned mining entity. Yet, when you go to your objective, you are stating that the state should not be a total holder of the mining, what is this now? The mining fraternity, let me say. The state should be owning certain mines and leave others, let me assume to you, because you are sitting there, what mines do you think are strategic to be state-owned? That is that, and you are also suggesting that in this ownership, the state should be passive, should play a passive role. I fail to understand that you can be a passive owner. In my view, you are saying, I own this powerhouse, this economic powerhouse, yet I'm allowing everyone to come and loot. You know, if my understanding is not talking to that fact, please assist me. Also, you are saying it in no uncertain terms that a state-owned mining vehicle will be a vehicle for wealth creation for women or black people. How would you explain that to the nation or to the state that seeks to build a nation that is united? When you would want mineral resources to be or to benefit a certain section of our society. Your last comment, where is it now? Yeah. Your last comment is confining the state ownership of this mining entity only in job creation. Is that perhaps the model that you would want us to be going for? A structure, a mining entity that would only be there to create jobs. That would be these questions, this side. If I would come to the organization itself, I don't know whether it's, which one is it? Is it SAWIMA or SAWIMI? SAWIMI is the organization. Huh? It's SAWIMI Ilige Nimali. It's SAWIMA organization. Okay. Now, what I was interested in there was to see an organogram of this organization so that we can see how does it benefit the broader women section of our society. You gave us the executive directors in one or another, but I thought I was going to see a structural organogram of the organization so that we understand if it's a national organization, then we would understand how does it benefit people in various regions or provinces or so. That 15% that we're talking about, how does it trickle down to people? How does it trickle down to your membership, if you have membership? I don't know. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mangala.
Thank you, Chair. That's one of my questions, is the membership. What is your membership? Oh, next, let me thank you about this wonderful report that you have given us. But I really wonder, if a member on the ground, Umama Nje, who is a member of the SAWIM or SAWIMA, I don't know, knows about this. Yeah. And my question, I don't know, somewhere, I don't know where to, is the number of women that you have trained. It's 1,000. And these women, what are they doing after being trained? What are they doing? And there was something about training the board members, I don't know, training to do what and what they do after that. And what is PPC? In a page, there's no page, SAWIMA's achievements. You are the beneficiary of PPC. What is PPC? Unfortunately, I'm not the member of SAWIMA. I foresaw problems. The problems that you have today. I will not hide it to you that women are complaining about SAWIMA. Really. It looks like me in this report, you are not saying anything about your members. You are saying big things about the board members, about what you are doing to the consortium, but not to the member, I don't know. But it doesn't really go to penetrate to the member, umama, or la papazo njengam. That is exactly what we would like to know. What are you doing to those people? Some of them may have shares, of which they don't know what is happening. Do you really go down to them? Or you just do as board members or as committee members, you talk for them, maybe. Nothing about kulumela njengomama doko, but of which, if that is the case, it is wrong. Thank you.
Would you care to respond to those, please?
Thank you. Before we respond,
Please press that.
Thank you. Before we respond, except for Mr. Sondo, it is very prudent to know to which company the questions are to be directed to. Because now there is the Section 21 company whose head is Alice Patudi that has got members who paid 300 rand per year for membership, but she is going to tackle that part. Mine is the investment arm. So I solemnly deal with shareholders who have put their money for purposes of purchasing shares. And because of compliance and because of being a woman's company, the board has seen fit that there should be corporate social responsibility, but I'll be attending to that when answering Mr. Sondo's question. So I'll hand over to Mrs. Patudi to try and see which question falls within her realm.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
A very serious interest. Put that thing off. I see hands jumping up immediately.
Chair, I think our agenda is very clear here. We call SAWIMA. We want to hear. That's why I was raising hands. Meanwhile, the other report wanted to be tabulated. Because the only things, actually I was taught that all of you represent SAWIMA. Actually, these other things, just a simple thing, we don't even want to know about it. We want to know about SAWIMA, we call SAWIMA, we recognize SAWIMA, and then that's all, nothing else.
Okay. Shall we, I think it's good that we get all this information. We don't see you as separate entities. We see SAWIMI as the investment arm of SAWIMA because here you've got women in mining.
the intervention of government was to form SAWIMA. Now SAWIMA took a decision to establish SAWIMI so that it can then assist to create business opportunities for women in SAWIMA. So please don't separate yourselves. As questions come, respond to them. Share the questions among yourselves. We see you as one body with divisions. It doesn't matter, you know, in a company there are different divisions, production division, finance, and all of that. We see things in that light. So we don't see you as two separate entities, no. Whether there's a registration of SAWIMI separately, but you're a subsidiary to SAWIMA. Whoever is a subsidiary to whom, because you started nice here in your document, you said in 1999, SAWIMA was formed by government, specifically by the Department of Minerals and Energy. That's why at some stage we'll call you back, because we want to know how much money was put in by government in there, what did you do, and all of that. But for now, we will deal with these things that are before us. But please don't divide yourself. You are one body.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Labo mama bafika la. Babe phethe ama shareholder certificate. I fake. Labo mama. Babe phethe ama shareholder certificate I fake. Sasimaswabuka. Sabona I fake yonke le. Ake chasise nangalo ukuthi kanjani.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Indeed, we came here wearing one hat, and it's clearly so. We will definitely go into the questions, and maybe to start with, let me state clearly to honorable members that SAWIMA organogram is represented by chairpersons of 9 provinces. And as we are seated here, I'm a national chairperson as well as the chairperson of Limpopo. And then Mrs. Langeni, even being the CEO, she's the chairperson of KwaZulu-Natal. Mas Toko seated here, she's the chairperson of Western Cape. And according to our constitution, there must be the chairpersons of the provinces being the directors in the investment company. So it's clearly stated to us we are now tackling SAWIMA issues. I think I've answered one of the questions from Honorable Sonto. Okay. The first comment from Honorable Lucas, indeed, you know, we have made some strides in the past 10 years. And, you know, you have rightfully mentioned that we can be awarded prospecting licenses. And, you know, for us to acquire funding, especially for the pre-feasibility study, it's a very, very thorny issue. You know, personally, I was involved in applying for prospecting rights for women in 2001. Those rights were wholly owned by Anglo. And we managed to acquire the 50%. But for us to raise funds, you know, for prospecting, it was a nightmare. We went all over the world. But finally, you know, we got a company which is listed in Toronto Stock Exchange as well as Johannesburg Stock Exchange. But indeed, up to today, we are still finding those problems when it comes to funding. And maybe one of the proposal or the appeal for government is to maybe have a tripartite alliance with ourselves, government, and financial institutions. Because when it comes to them funding a pre-feasibility study, they're not interested. So we are appealing for the tripartite alliance. Honorable Magagula, your question really, you know, actually got goosebumps. We know recently during the mining endeavor, we saw on TV, we heard that there were women doing, especially for the Western Cape. And as you know, that as I've indicated in my presentation, that since the inception of SAWIMA, well, you know, we can open a can of worms and talk about the past. Women, as they were, wherever they are, anywhere, women have insights, and that has discredited us. But I'm saying, I'm presenting what this board has done since from the beginning of 2008. We were elected at the end of at the end of 2007, and that is why we came and said, let's come up with an, you know, a turnaround strategy, how to be portrayed as, you know, women who are serious in business. And we heard that the complaint from the chairperson that women were promised in 1999 that they will be given mines, they will be given prospecting rights. And that is why, you know, we came in and said it's high time that apart from training women, also to, you know, coming from business background, is to, you know, inform them what is it, apart from applying for prospecting rights, of which nobody, even government, will never come to you and say, here are rights or here are list of mineral resources throughout the country. But we said, let them also, you know, be involved in procurement. But for the fact that somebody somewhere promised them something in 1999, we don't have facts towards that. And to say that some women have sold the houses, staying in sex, definitely, here's the chairperson, we have never received that report in our office. We know that because of Section 21 company, for you as a woman to affiliate is only 300 rand, and that 300 rand really is just sometimes for capitalization office, because during the every year, what we did, we embarked on women to undergo training, of which some of the money at least pays for that, but other companies like MPA and other financial institutions did assist us. But for them to wait for 10 years and really do it and say that, you know, they didn't achieve anything from SAWIMA, it's true, a lot of women didn't achieve anything from SAWIMA. That is why we're partnering with some of the institutions, you know, to see that women are empowered throughout the country. Maybe the chairperson Western Cape will maybe add on what I've left. But currently what we said, what we are doing, we are holding roadshows all over the country, whereby we communicate directly with women. And we came to Western Cape just last week, we were with women, you know, just to find out what is it that women have been doing, what is it that, you know, the problems within the province. And, you know, they're shaking their heads because apparently there was a problem, and we had that problem, we resolved it. I think we left at about 11 p.m. just last week when we were here in Parliament, before we came to Parliament. You know, this problem, even yesterday we were in Mpumalanga, because we were going to conduct this roadshow until we finalize this month and next week in Gauteng. Even in Mpumalanga, there is a problem actually throughout the country whereby, you know, you are called as a group of women by a particular woman who has made it within SAWIMA, because anybody, any woman who is in mining, who has made it, that you all know, you all read on TV, on media and whatever, they started here. They have made it, but because they've got some money in their pockets, they promise this poor woman, because they have identified some valuable minerals, they act as the financial guarantee. And this way, you know, a particular woman will take majority shareholding. We had the same problem yesterday in Mpumalanga, and last week we had the similar problem here in the Western Cape. And I think Mastoko will elaborate further on that. And it was first time that we heard about that. And the issue of the ordinary women down there, Mama. In 2005, from 2004 actually, we identified women, especially in the rural area, in partnership with the Department of Trade and Industry, and also Department of Mineral Resources, then the Department of DME. whereby they were identifying women who were innovative. If Honorable could remember the technology for women in business, we identified women throughout the country, especially in rural areas, who are maybe engaging in beneficiation. And, you know, we recruited them to join SAWIMA. And I can proudly announce that some women from rural areas in Limpopo, in Mpumalanga, they came first. They were awarded, you know, they came number one through national awards where they beneficiate gold, copper, and whatever. And I'm talking about women in the rural, deep rural areas, and they didn't have transport. And a company like Anglo, for example, came in and donated a buggy, of which, as I'm talking to you, mamas, they are still using it. Every year, we encourage women in different provinces to participate. We are not focusing on elite women. I have mentioned in my presentation that we are the beneficiaries of PPC, it's Pretoria Petroleum Cement, PPC, whereby just last year we signed an agreement with them. They set aside some few millions where we identified projects where, you know, we want to take a project from a particular point and move it to another level. I've mentioned that we have outsourced it to Mintech. Mintech, it's, you know, giving them, you know, advancing them, upskilling the current project, the product that they are manufacturing, so that at the end of the day, the final product is of international standard. We are doing that. We have also identified some women, for example, in the Sekhukhune area. As you know that most of the platinum comes from Limpopo, so we have identified 30 women in that area, whereby somebody has already donated ethylene. Those women are going to open up their own factory. There's some 640,000 that is already allocated for those women in Limpopo. From there, Mintech also will go to Limpopo, train them, and at the end of the day, they're going to own that factory. It's going to be run by them, and Mintech will also assist them with marketing whatever product agreement that we have signed. In the Eastern Cape, there's a project as well, Uno Potwani, was launched last year, and we know that they are looking for some funding. And we are busy allocating in negotiation with PPC to say if we can allocate some money. But with them, they said we have to launch all these projects before we can even consider other provinces. We are gradually working towards, you know, empowering women, especially in the rural areas.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We are very happy to get the questions, and maybe somehow the philosophy of who or what SAWIMA is got lost, because SAWIMA is divided according to the regions in the RSA, as the national chairperson has said. And the specific aim was to introduce women into the mining sector and to make them aware through training so that they can attain the language in mining, and then to organize themselves and identify projects at a regional level. So a chairperson of a given area had to organize her region together with the executive committee. They would identify what type of mineral was in that area. They would see what they could do, and they could also, depending on the infrastructure, they could even open an account on their own and put money, just like women in a stock fell. So there was never a situation whereby women had to be given an opportunity, except now that there is SAWIMI. They had to organize themselves and see what was in the area, come together. The 300 rand per year, I don't think that there could be a person that could sell a house for 300 rand a year, was for purposes of organizing, training, at regional level, and in which case, whenever they had to be a conference, when nationally they had to be given a report, then there would be transport organized and all, and it went beyond the 300 rand. But what I think happened specifically here in the Western Cape, because both myself as the CEO as well as the chairman took a tour of all the provinces to tell them about the achievements in both SAWIMA and especially SAWIMI after we had sold our platinum mine in the Limpopo, yes, the lawn mill in the Ingwala. So we came to unpack. Then we were confronted by some women. There were about 25 women who were there, and yet the Western Cape is so huge. And we were told now that they formed themselves and their chairperson is going to tell them. And unfortunately for the women, unfortunately, they will never talk in a meeting situation about their problems. They then, you know, will just spread, you know, wrong information outside, in which case now this is why even the minister was telling us that, oh, you must just stop SAWIMA because it has got such a bad image. But we had to be committed to ensuring that the objectives of SAWIMA are definitely met in educating women, in making them aware as to how to look at opportunities around where they are and all. And even the language in SAWIMA meetings is Zulu or isiXhosa or Sotho, depending on where we are, and because it was never to be an elitist organization, but some will identify an opportunity because they are clever in that region, they will register a company, then they will take it, give it to husband. I just want to call upon her to take the process forward. She is the chairperson, and I'm stunned to hear that she is one of the people who are complaining. But coming to Mr. Sonto's question about a fake certificate. Thank you. I am stunned to hear about a fake certificate because we would like to see it. Because
I was going to request that, Chairperson, because we are talking about people who are here.
Yes.
Bayeva into Bagutwa Abateti Nyan. Now, the arrangement of Parliament, therefore, is such that we are meant to talk to these people, not to other people, which is very, very unfair. Very, very unfair. It's an arrangement of Parliament.
Yes.
But I wanted to jump into this, to their rescue, really, because we need to rescue them.
Mm-hmm.
When they are told right in their faces that their complaints have got no basis, the fake certificates that they showed us at one point, they were saying, we have those fake certificates here. I know, Chairperson, were a bit deviating from the point of discussion, but this is something that we are going to call SAWIMA for, so that what the state has invested in this women organization is seen to be benefiting the women.
We
were going to, as the Chairperson has said, but what I think we need to check is whether these things are here really, so that we say this is the thing that people were given. I know that Umama Ustokwe perhaps is going to be given a chance to respond to this. Because I was about to ask both of you about your risk management strategy. Where these provincial representatives who are chairpersons of those provinces are taking these projects for themselves instead of giving them to women. What management, what risk management strategy do you have around that? Because perhaps they may say, fortunately we know about what Mintec is doing to those women, but we didn't know that they were linked to SAWIMA. We know what they are doing and the products that you are talking about, we saw the products. But whether that project is going to benefit women, as you are pronouncing, is something else, you know. Now, it makes it incumbent on us as members of parliament that when people are here and they are complaining, really, we are bound to say, if there is proof, if there is evidence, let us hear it whilst we are not discussing that thing. That was my intervention, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. The other unfortunate thing in Parliament is something called time. We are beyond our time. But I see two hands. I'm not sure because Umama was going to take a bite before your intervention. Because it's important to hear. Because two or three members raised this very same question. So she was about to respond. I want to hear what is her response in the presence of those. If she's a Western Cape chair, those people are represented by her. So that then we can see thereafter. Please, hold it on. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. And the members of the parliament. I think we do have a meeting that will be taking place on the 5th of September, and whereby these members, they've got the certificates. When we had an AGM, the person who gave them the certificates was Dineo Lidwaba, and she was part and parcel of that mine, the same mine that was presented by Unomfundo, the former chairperson, the sand mine that was given to the Western Cape women. And out of that, Dineo Lidwaba and myself, we have been given a task to meet the consultant by the name of Olaf. And it's whereby he went to the geoscience people to go and test, because Before you mine, you have to get the consultant to test the sand that was there. And the results that we have been given was that the sand that was applied for, it was not a building sand, it was a clay sand. So that mine is still there, I don't know. They still need to put their application for the clay sand. All we have to do now with their certificates that were given, I also have mine that I was given with a 00 shares. And I think we have to get hold of her, that on that 5th of September, when we're going to have a meeting, she will have to explain to us. Thank you, Chairperson.
That meeting here in Western Cape or in National
Meeting? Yes, it will be here at the Western Cape at Zuha. Yes. And the other one that I will have to explain, we, as the women of the Western Cape, there is a uranium that is based at Beaufort West, whereby some of the women we raised this in our meetings to go and find out about these mines. Hence, they are here, the uranium. But what happened is that when we were busy trying to find this uranium, one of the ladies, there were a group of women that they wanted to apply, but as you know that women will always be, you know, acting as if they are were going together. This lady had to separate herself and took that application with her husband. And they sent their shares to the Australian guy, and they got their $8 million for the husband and $8 million for herself. And one of those ladies that was left behind and the others, she is here. She is the one who can sit down with the national people and explain clearly what happened. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I said there's an animal called time. But because your hands were up, I will give Honorable Matebe and Honorable Tinto an opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson. In August. Mine is just to rescue. I'm requesting and appealing to Chairperson because I've got a lot of issues to address now, which time is constrained with us. So can we meet in another day, Chairperson? I'm suggesting with this Sawima. And we'll have enough time because really now the issues are so, the basket are full. So we can't make it because within 20 minutes now we'll be going back to the house. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tindo.
Chair, I'm sorry that I had to be excused and then now I'm not quite clear as to what is going on, but now when I arrived, I just can't make anything that is going on here. But I just want to suggest, Chair, that we still have to meet with both groups, the Sawima and the Sawimi. I think we still have to meet with them, Chair. And I wanted to suggest, to propose that at least your office takes up this issue. We just don't leave it open like this. We just take it up again through your office, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's thank you for now for the interaction. I think you spoke to the subject matter of the possibility of a state-owned mining company. And that indeed is true. There are a number of concerns that we've got. For instance, you're painting a rosy picture, but the report on transformation reviewer paints a bleak picture of there not being transformation. And in the main, women are in the receiving end. And I don't understand how compatible are these two. One, you're saying there's success, we know that there's no success. But also, as members of parliament, we go out of this building. We've been to Mpumalanga, we've been to Northwest, we've been to Northern Cape, we've been to KZN. Whenever there is poverty, whenever there is unemployment, whenever there are social ills, the first people to be directly affected are women. And what we have seen with our own eyes is quite terrible. And hence, I think members are saying there will have to be another engagement so that we understand exactly what is it that you are doing,
how were you assisted? How must you be assisted? Because you try to dispel the notion that women are elite women. So you're trying to debunk it. But I think we need further engagement so that we are able to then understand. I think for what we have requested you to come for today, you have dealt with that. What I would do, I would want you to leave your contact details with the secretaries. And that we must have, maybe before the 5th of September, even if it's a day before, as we are going to be coming down, let's sit with the Western Cape component, these people that are there, and yourselves, tease out this pertinent problem. So that when you go to that meeting, we then get the report back of how were the things sorted out in that meeting. And later, we will engage you in a bigger scheme of things as portfolio committee, particularly pertaining to the emancipation of women in this field, in this sector. Because here, it's not about business women only. It's about women folk, even those that are residing in the mining communities. You need to take care of those people. So we'd have to engage you. You've got women who are working in the mines. One way or the other, once they would have their unions and this or that, they would also look at SAWIMA as one of their shield that would, you know, come into their rescue in many challenges that they are faced with. So therefore, when we say women in mining, we're looking at the matter holistically. And therefore, we will engage you on that. We understand you're a new crop of leadership. There were people before you, and you found the situation. You tried to turn it around very well. I mean, that's the responsibility of leadership. And hence, we're going to engage with you so that you look at the history of what you have inherited, because now you deal with your present, which is good. You're showing us some movements here, which are quite plausible. So for us to find, that's why maybe you hear these messages from the ministry, say that let's close this thing down. But the question is, do you really want to close it, or do you want to go in and solve the problem and challenges that are there and deal with them in a manner that the main objective for which this body was formed still continues to be dealt with. So, in those few words, we want to thank you very much. And Siti Guni Bomama, asini nigami tuba loba ni tete, ngoba indebe sifuna wile, ibipam kwetu. But, njeba siku elapa wuzikokelo senu, sina utibana, before E5 of September, kesi ukola serelo mkwimu. Then, ngemva kwe-5 of September, sizafuna feedback. Honorable members, shall we attend the meeting? We are way beyond our time. Thank you very much for your patience. Thank you.